Hello and welcome to the Computer Game Show. My name is Sean Bell. I am joined by Matthew Murray.
You're right.
And James Farley.
Hello.
Dave is not here. He's poorly.
Well, that's what he says.
After, I think he is poorly. He's definitely, he finished a Balatro run. Was that his first? I think that was his first, wasn't it?
Oh, it can't be that poorly then, can he?
Well, yeah, because he says games. He's got a fever, but when I get a fever, I can't really play games.
I don't think anyone can play games, really, if ever fever. So, alarm bells.
Yeah, should probably email his employer.
Yep.
Fancy a week off, isn't
it? He's allowed a week. No, he knows he can just ask for a week off if he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He fancied a week off a couple of weeks ago, and you two called in sick. So, mate, I was surprised. He was probably like, we should have done that. Fuck, we should have done that. We should have said,
that's what I said. I wanted to work it out so that it was him doing the show on his own on Tuesday.
We moved to Tuesday. We moved to Wednesday. We moved to Thursday.
We are going to start the show the same way we always do, by thanking the full Nels crew. They are Aaron Patrick, the QuickBooks chap, Simon Nelson, Moomin Biscuit, Trans Right to Human Rights, Dave Ernsberger, Colin Brown, Gasman, Rocketman76, Grey Dragon Claw, Smooth Monkey, Richard Sawyer, John Tempelli, Jackie Sniper, Sam Higton, Tom S, Stan, Philip with an F, Fred Fenge, John the Nelsmeister Nelson, Ryan Cobain, Stephen the Nuke Littler, and happy birthday, Vituki. They all went to patreon.com/TCGS. And they went full Nels, which is very, very kind of them. You don't have to go full Nels. There's other tiers where you get other stuff. We did our Patreon bonus show last week, which everyone's been really lovely about. Bit of a heavy one. But I think it was good. People seem to be responding to it really nicely. It's been really cool in the Discord and stuff. And this week, this Wednesday, we're finally, after talking about it for 2 months, we're going to do the Sonic Adventure game book, Sonic versus Zonic, we need a backup plan because it might only take half an hour.
I think that's generous, honestly. I don't think it's going to take that long.
Really? Yeah, we're putting your backup talks over then.
I'm pretty sure you can die in it, right? You can fail and have to like start again. We're going to allow ourselves save points, right?
No, we need to have permadeath.
It's not Iron Man mode.
Yeah.
So we're doing that this Wednesday or today, if you're listening to this when the show comes out, at, I assume, 9 p.m. We don't sort of loosely talked about it, didn't we?
Yeah, it'll be 9 p.m. I'll put a Patreon post out to explain how you watch it live. But yeah, £8.50 above patrons can watch Sonic vs. Sonic Patreon. And yeah, it'll be live from this Wednesday at 9.
Cool.
Just to get a bit more about the bonus show. Yeah, basically I tell the whole story about my wrist and other stuff that's been going on the last 4 months.
Wrist and life.
It is a big one.
It is a big one. It's good though. Right, feedback. What did the listeners think of last week's show, Matt?
Oh, hang on, just before we do that, hang on. Just...
Okay.
Let's get a party started now.
If you want to know what that is all about, I'm afraid you have to pay us money and listen to the bonus show.
Yeah.
It's a visual gag. Sorry everyone listened to the podcast.
But you really should be watching YouTube just to see what just happened there.
and then listen
to the bonus show.
Yeah.
Feedback, yeah. Simon Ulrich. James has a Ulrich. Gun collection and he loves brawlers like Yakuza and Streets of Rage. He should consider taking out his frustrations on a punching bag at his local German gym. I too have pent up anger that made me miss work or mentally check out during office meetings. But all of that changed when I joined an MMA gym. As Nike once wisely said, just do it, my fellow Bavarian, just do it.
Not Bavarian, because I mean, I live in the north of Germany.
You're an adopted...
Yeah,
son of Bavaria, right?
But also, I mean, yeah, I can't see me doing MMA. I think that would be a bit of a disaster.
I don't think you have to like necessarily. I don't think going to an MMA gym means you have to fight people.
Do you not?
I think you're disappointed by that.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think it's just
a gym where you prepare to potentially fight someone. I don't think. Yeah, it's like you know,
you
right?
Have to
okay,
spar, though.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
I don't know what the rules are. It may shock you. I've never been to an MMA show.
I mean, I knew about it, but surely you'll do training and then you'll spar, you know, in the octagon.
We have an MMA. There's an MMA gym where I live. Not in my house. I mean, in the town where I live. But it was next to like a soft play we used to go in a lot
Sometimes you got confused and you start punching the hell out of
You just be hanging out in the soft play and then you just hear just people kicking the shit out of each other in the next room. It's really weird. Just properly smashing about and making grunts and stuff. I mean, I assume it was an MMA place. That could have been.
Could have been anything, yeah.
Could have been anything.
Could have been a sex dungeon. I wanted to find an MMA club when, in the first few months after LED was born, and I was like, had loads of pent up rage and anger. I was actually looking like, where can I go? Because I want to kill someone. But
Where can I safely hit things?
Unsafely hit. But, you know, in the end, I took it out in the room, the game on iOS. Barry Ben. That's the one. Lads, last week when Sean talked about someone thinking they needed to watch Cheers in order to get into the Frasier, I misheard and thought Sean said Asia. I was even more confused when David said, there's a lot of Cheers episodes, isn't there? Rather than why the fuck do you need to watch a sitcom from the 80s to enter Asia? Cheers, lads. Keep it up.
I don't mind that. Normally when people try and do a joke that's literally just they misheard something and it's like, oh, well, that's quite funny, but I didn't say that. I don't mind that. I'm amused by the idea of having to watch all the shit. Like, there's a test on the way in.
Yeah, that would be
correct. James is off. He's had enough. James, managed.
James is bored already.
5 minutes. Oh, no, he's back. It's all right. Oh, he's lost a layer.
No, I was too hot.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Just do what, baby. Okay, Raffy. Hi, guys. Last week you were talking about what guests you could have on. Would you ever consider bringing a listener in? Perhaps listeners would need to submit video auditions, and the two finalists have to duke it out at the next TCGS Con. Also disappointed that no one mentioned Sean LeBode when you were rattling off all the great guests last week, for shame. I'm fairly sure we did mention Sean.
We did, because Dave said, like, Sean and Sarah. Now, I know most of you listening would assume he was just saying nice things about me, but no, he never does that. He was actually talking about Sean the Bode.
Yeah. That's a shame, Raffy. note, as I know someone will verify to check whether Sean was mentioned, and on the off chance I was mistaken, I prepared the following statement to be used in replacement of the above. Great show, guys. Second note, even if I was correct in you not mentioning Sean, the below is still factually correct. Great show, guys. One thing, Raffy, you could have just gone back and listened.
Yeah, you could have checked yourself.
Could have done that.
All that out.
Could have done that. It would have been quicker than typing, possibly. Yep.
This whole idea of bringing listeners in, I think this is something we should agree to do now while David's not here, and knowing full well that he'll love the idea, and that also that they should be preparing musical stings as well that we can then add into parts of the podcast, because I know he loves that as well. Yeah.
See, people don't like it when we add musical stings, though. When I did that, the buzz with James Farley one, like, there was a few people like, no, that was weirdly unsettling, just because people listen to this knowing it's 2 hours plus of just talking without anything weird going on. And I sort of get that. Like, if you're listening to a show that you know doesn't have any stings and you suddenly throw one in.
I might throw a sting in between everything this week and put a bed beneath the music.
Beneath
us talking.
Please do. It's...
Who's next?
Okay, Big UK Daz. Listening to you talk about Balatro on the last few podcasts and enjoying the poker element of a deck-building game, I wish to bring another poker-based game to you called Aces and Adventures, which is a deck-building RPG with poker-based combat spread across 13 campaigns. I think it's currently only available on Steam for about £8 in the spring sale, and you can pick it up from eneba.com for 50p. I can't verify that website, so...
It's grey as fuck.
Okay, well, just buy it for £8 on Steam, I reckon. I think this one would definitely be a game that Sean would love. Have you heard about it, Sean? Aces and Adventures?
I haven't heard about it, and I looked it up. It does look really good, and I bet the developers are a little bit fed up about everyone going on about Balatro. I'm not saying it even looks necessarily similar, but yeah, similar themes, obviously. It looks really good. I will check it out.
Are you interested, James, in finding some more deck-building RPGs with poker-based combat mechanics spread across 13 campaigns?
No.
I thought Balatro would have changed your mind on the whole deck building roguelike.
No.
Okay, he's not. Okay.
To admit that it's like the RPG or the turn-based combat thing where he insisted he didn't like turn-based combat.
And then we can name examples of turn-based.
I don't like turn-based combat.
But you do in certain circumstances, and that's fine.
Yeah, but I like it begrudgingly.
But that still means you like it.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly or not, you'd like it.
Let's move on.
Yep, Simon Moorcroft, another great show last week, as always. Though I couldn't help feeling sorry for Sean. For years, Sean has had to put up with sighs and little giggles from James every time Sean talks about another deck builder roguelike. Now, amazingly, James has finally found one he likes and credited Dave for recommending it to him. James likes it so much, in fact, that he said he would like to stream it with Dave in the biggest fuck you to Sean. Don't let the bastards get you down, Sean.
Thank you, Simon. No, I mean, I don't know why I'm defending James. I think James's point was that, well, like, I'm never going to sell a roguelike deck builder to James because he knows I really like most of them and he likes none of them, or so he thinks. I think if he played more of them, he'd probably change his mind.
I'll tell you what, but I nearly bought Inscription today again.
Did you?
Because I've got it on PlayStation, but then I nearly bought it on Switch because it was £8. And I thought, because of going away, I thought maybe I could play it on there.
You absolutely should. Man. £3.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But yeah, by understanding this instance, like a recommendation of this sort of game from Dave means more than one from me. The whole thing, you know, the whole thing with Dave, having to sort of confirm all my recommendations with John Denton, it's starting to sting a little bit.
I was going
to
say, yeah, in the order, James, most valuable, least valuable, Sean, David, Sean Denton, or David. Well, what's the order?
Depends on the game. Obviously, surely. Is number one.
Yeah. Okay. And then David, regardless, and then Sean's at the bottom. And I'm below that.
But I am on the list.
That's you are, yeah. I'm not even on the list,
Sean. 8 billion people on this planet. A lot of them are not on that list. Yeah, I'm number three. I think that's pretty good. Yeah. It's bronze
but
medal.
If I was on the list, James, where would I be if I was on the list?
You'd have to play some games to be on the list, Matt.
Got you there.
Oh, right. You have got me there, yeah. You prick. Ryan Cobain, dear TCGS Co., just a quick thing while it's in my head. Dave's comments regarding Helldivers 2 getting an 8 from Edge being too low. I thought it was pretty well established at this point that an 8 from Edge is basically 9 anywhere and everywhere else, and last year was awarded to Jedi Survivors and Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty. That and the 2020 initial release managed to get all the way to the final four to Gotti Show and could have won it, but it was a 2020 game. This bodes well for Helldivers 2 as probably a top 4 Gotti contender, and if not, it's still not a 2020 release masquerading as a modern game. Anyway, cheers for all the content pods and stuff you guys do. Much love, Ryan Cobain.
I know. Just obviously, we just really like Helldivers 2. And we think it deserves perfect scores
actually,
everywhere.
When I see a game from Edge getting an 8, I think, okay, fine. But if it gets a 7, I'm even more interested, actually.
Yeah, the Edge 7's the one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it's like, what is this game? And Edge 7, you have me intrigued.
I need to get the current issue of Edge because it's got Citizen Sleeper 2 on it.
It does, yeah. Yeah, my subscriber copy came through and it's a gorgeous copy.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I got to rub it in that you're a real fan.
Yeah.
I just pick and chip. Well, I felt really bad because I was a subscriber for a while and then just, I don't know, just some months I just would not get around to reading it and then just, I don't know, I just end up with this pile of magazines and it's like, I'll probably
never read them again. Yeah, that happens to me too, Sean, but like you can get subscriptions online which are so cheap. It's like, well.
That's true.
I've got this problem where I've got a digital subscription. It's not a digital subscription because it's like I get it through like one of the news apps that I use, right? Mm. But I can't read it because it's like it's really annoying because I'm doing it on like Apple News and you can't like it's really difficult to like change the font size and everything.
Really? So you can't just zoom in.
No, you can zoom in. Yeah. But what I really hate is the way that you can't flip your phone into like landscape mode to read it. Right. And what's annoying about that is the edges like column widths are just the wrong size if you're reading
to this
on a
shilling
phone.
Sort really? Out your column width, yeah. You prick.
You thought they would have fixed that for phones. I mean, I know I got a message like last month saying actually now you get a digital subscription with your Edge subscription, so maybe you can view it somewhere else, James.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's
such a shame because you remember they sort of pioneered the digital version being like actually interactive and cool.
Yeah,
like
that was really cool.
Animations and links,
yeah.
And you could like tap on the screenshots and it'd be a little video and stuff. That stuff was amazing. And then I believe it was Future's decision to stop doing that, which I think was very short-sighted.
But yeah, I really like that, especially because they used to like have loads of previews for stuff that I had no idea what this is, and just being able to click a link to see a preview video of it,
and then you get
like a better idea. It was great, but no longer there.
No, it's good to YouTube for the same thing.
Could do that, yeah.
Could do that, yeah. Geen, can we please have James's 90s dream as a mug? I would love to have James on my desk at all times. Well, Geen, before this pod, I was like, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, right? I am going to create the mug and put it on our store. And when I read this message, I'm going to say, it's available now, everyone. But I put the two designs on it. You want two designs because if you're left-handed, you want to see it. And if you're right-handed, you want to see it. Otherwise, what you see, like a white mug, rubbish. And with two designs and us making, I think, 49 pence per mug profit, the mug would have cost £19. Now, we can't set those prices. That's just the price that Spreadshirt have it. 19 quid. I think the postage is rubbish anyway on Spreadshirt. Mm-hmm. Although I think maybe today there's an offer where it's free postage. Anyway.
We should you know, big that up.
If you listen to this on Wednesday, the offer's probably finished. But I was like, no one's going to pay nine, and they shouldn't pay £19 for a mug. So, no. We tried, but it's not going to be available because... For two James's face, it's just ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, like the t-shirts are on the pricier end, but I think they are genuinely nice t-shirts, like the ones I've bought from us, because we have to buy them ourselves.
Yeah, well, again, we upgraded to the premium t-shirt, which is better than just the cheap things we were having a few years ago.
So they are really nice. So I would like it to be less, but still an amount I'm comfortable charging for a t-shirt, even though we don't see much of it. But yeah, I can't ask people to spend 20 quid on a fucking mug.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely. Yeah. The hoodies also, are amazing. I need to get another one, actually. I love my hoodies I've had before. But no,
I need a bigger one.
It's unfortunate that we will not be selling mugs because they're £20 plus postage, which is too much for a mug, baby. So you just have to imagine James on your desk.
About mouse mats? Could we get a mouse mat?
You can get them. Yeah, you can get all sorts of things. But, I mean... We need to go. We also need to build a time machine to go back to a time where people use mouse mats, and we can't also
That's
build
true.
That.
What about one of those, you know, the sort of desk mats that people use, where it like rolls out over the entire desk, and the keyboard and the mouse goes on it?
Now that would be good. Maybe get
I don't understand why they're a thing when mouse mats aren't.
I've got one right in front of me right now. It's just nice, isn't it?
Like, I'm not having a go. I'm just curious.
Yeah, it is basically a giant mouse mat because the little square ones are just horrible, aren't they?
I'm using a mouse mat.
You actually?
Yeah, because otherwise it makes horrendous noise.
Hold it up on the camera. I want to see it.
Yeah, right, prove it.
sorry, podcast listeners.
There you go.
No, there it is.
Yeah,
fair
so you are.
It is.
Yeah, now turn over. Let's see what design is, you pervert. We know what's on the other side of that mouse mat, you sicko. maybe we can have some more James merch, but stuff that isn't going to cost the earth, basically. What we can maybe develop is some AR kind of James Farley for the desk. Filter where you look for your phone, there's a little James dancing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We just need some footage of you dancing against a plain background, James, would be fine.
Yeah.
Nah.
A green screen, even. You can have mine now.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That is it for feedback. Go to tcgs.co/dearTCGS to leave your feedback.
James, I've just realised people will be like, oh, is Sean going to do one of those funny... No, I'm not. What's
Come
the news,
on,
James?
We haven't had a call. It's been years since you last did one of those, which is a shame.
The only news story I can think of is Kate Middleton, and that's not had a fun end, so I can't...
No,
I'm not that, making
that's,
a,
that's been ruined now, hasn't it?
Yeah, well...
Sad for her, sad for the family.
It's been ruined is a bit harsh.
Sorry, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
James, what's the news, mate?
We had some news which dropped, that Matt dropped in my lap just before the...
What an image. Sorry, go on.
The show, which was, it's Chris String from Games and Strut Beers, who's been at GDC. And
it makes it sound like this is the story's about him.
It's not about him, but he is the main person.
Chris, you went to GDC. Well done, mate.
He's the main person that we're quoting here. Okay. This is from VGC. They ran the story, which is publishers are reportedly questioning support for Xbox amid flatlining sales. And this was after Chris Ring, who, you know, spoke to them about, or I'm not sure he spoke to them. I haven't read the story properly. He has basically got a whole bunch of quotes.
Is this because you knew Dave wasn't in tonight? And
yeah.
He's like, I'll fucking win.
No, it's because I literally saw the story 2 minutes before we started recording.
Yep, no,
so I had to very quickly copy and paste bits. But anyway, so one of the main takeaways from GDC was that Xbox is in real trouble as a hardware manufacturer, according to Chris String. He said, the other thing I heard it from a very prominent company, and one not so prominent, was that Xbox's performance in Europe is just flatlining. You can follow our monthly coverage in the games market, and you can see that Xbox sales are falling, and it's been falling all throughout last year, and it's falling even harder this year. The phrase that one major company who released a big game last year said was, "I don't know why we bothered supporting it." We mentioned on a previous podcast, so this is him talking about the GamesIndustry.biz podcast, we'd heard retailers in Europe are considering or had already been cutting back their Xbox stock on their shelves, hardware games, that kind of thing, and now you've got third-party publishers going, "We're putting in a lot of effort trying to create a Series S version and an X version of a game," when, to be honest with you, for us, the market is PC and PS5. Then he says, and with Xbox putting some of the games on PS5, and from what I understand, the majority of them will be coming across at some point, assuming it progresses as Xbox believes it probably will, I think Xbox is in real trouble as a hardware manufacturer. And that was the thing that came out of GDC for me. So that was...
Damn.
Yeah, Chris String talking about...
It's been interesting, because I'd seen like a couple of... I mean, this is like the indie end of things, but... where people are doing physical versions of games that have already been available digitally. There's been a few. The one I can remember off the top of my head was Talos Principle 2, so that's Devolver. They're doing a physical PS5 version, but not an Xbox One. And I've seen a few where I've been like, oh, I would have bought the Xbox One, but I guess not much of a market for it. And obviously that, you know, looking at that... that sort of chimed in with the stuff we'd heard about, like, Xbox sort of withdrawing from physical... media, mm-hmm. despite claims otherwise. But then now hearing this, it's like, oh, are people just not buying anything on the Xbox?
But then, I mean, that the thing is, like with Game Pass and everything, I think, has that not encouraged people not to buy stuff because they're just thinking it'll come to Game Pass at some point or whatever and not buying stuff anymore?
Yeah, like, I mean, I know they've talked about the fact that, you know, early Game Pass stuff would actually sell more as a result of having been on Game Pass, and that was... so it was seen as this sort of universally positive thing. But yeah, we're now at the point where that's worn off. Because like, you used to see this with, like, when the daft Steam sales first started, and Valve were like, yeah, we can sell, you know, Team Fortress 2 for £3 or whatever, because not only do we actually make more money than, like, because so many people pick it up, because why not, it's £3. But then actually, even once it goes back to full price, there are more people buying it. Like, there's a longer tail on it than you would expect. But I think all that's out the window now. Like, whenever there's a Steam sale, you know, it used to be like, oh my god, I'm gonna buy loads of games for £2-3 each, and that's just not a thing anymore, and hasn't been for years. So again, I think the shine sort of came off that, and people got wise to it, and it was too much, yeah, just people waiting for these like massive discounts. And I wonder if the same thing has happened with Game Pass now, where everyone's just like, well, I'll just wait for it.
It's really difficult to sort of see where this is going to go, because I can't see a world where they stop making Xboxes. I just can't see that happening. It seems very strange for them to go, because mostly because of Game Pass, because as we know at the moment, the only platforms you can get that on are Xbox and PC. Yeah, this is the only places you can get this, and that's largely because other companies will not allow it on their machines because, you know, because of the competitive element. Yeah. So if they really want to push Game Pass, they can't stop Xbox, can they? Because they can't surely just rely on like PC Game Pass instead, unless they just bin it at some point and just say, okay, we're just going to sell games instead.
Possibly. I mean, but like, you know, consoles have generally been loss leaders, and it's the software and accessories that make the money. But then if they're not even selling a lot of software, like, you got to think, what is the point? You know, it's sad, because I don't really see any other... I don't see us really, as you say, like, changing or improving, really. I mean, I don't know what sales are like for these consoles, and I'm sure they're still fine enough, but it doesn't take much for, like, you know, the tide to change. And if a few people are doing, think about it now, these articles will probably make other people thinking, hey, well, maybe we shouldn't bother either. And then, you know, it'll just get bigger and bigger. And before you know it, like, yeah, I guess it's not a surprise in many ways, you know. They've been de-emphasizing the hardware because they're like, we want to get Xbox, you know, Game Pass everywhere. It's a service. They want to put on other places. They, you know, putting the PC games on, putting the games on PC. It's kind of no surprise in a way. And they must have seen what the end goal was. And
the end goal
was always de-emphasizing hardware sales. And I think they've said it in their statements. They probably would be saying it in their statements to try and get around the fact that sales obviously aren't as good as PS5, but...
But that end game doesn't work, like, unless they can get Game Pass on everything. Like,
no, it doesn't, no.
It really doesn't. I don't see where they go with that. I mean, I can see that if these games do very well on PlayStation, you know, the ones that they've, like Sea of Thieves and Hi-Fi Rush and stuff like that, surely within Microsoft as well, people are going to be like, yeah, we should be doing more of this.
Yep.
We could be making a lot more money, you know, from this.
Yeah. I mean, think about, you know, the forthcoming, I mean, not Starfield, obviously, we know what that's like, but, you know, the next Elder Scrolls game, let's assume it's amazing. You know, they'll be mad not to have that on PS5. Think of all the revenue they'll make. If they keep it just on Xbox and Game Pass, yeah, it's like a potential way to sell hardware, but...
I don't think there's any other industry...
They're turning down by not having it on the other consoles.
Yeah, like, I don't think there's any other industry where it'd be acceptable to be like, oh yeah, we're going to invest billions in this stuff and then we're going to sell it only to the smallest... market available.
Yeah,
like, that's just insane, isn't it? I understand there's a longer game there, and there's you know, they're wanting to get people on board with the Microsoft ecosystem, so then they get the cut of everything going forward. But it's just, yeah, you wonder if the investment is now just so great that it's just impossible.
You know, obviously they signed a lot of these 10-year deals to get the acquisition over the line. I wonder where Xbox will be in 10 years. Because all like, yeah, it can't be Xbox exclusive, but after 10 years potentially, well, there might not even be an Xbox around in 10 years, like a console around in 10 years.
Have we heard anything about the Switch version of Call of Duty? Because they kept going on about that.
Yeah, they assured us that's happening, didn't they?
Yeah. But there's been...
I'm sure
mobile port, wasn't it?
No, they claimed... It wasn't going to be that. They said it won't be just...
But even then, it'd have to be a cloud version, surely.
Mm-hmm.
And also, having said that, like, I think there was an update they mentioned last week or the week before to, like, the, I was a Call of Duty Mobile, whatever it's called, sorry, I don't play it. But, like, they mentioned that there's, like, a really big update and patch for, like, the latest, like, iPhone 15 Pros, and it brings it almost up to, like, console quality in terms of graphics. Oh, wow. Like, so even that version probably wouldn't run on a Switch, given Apple's kind of, you know, GPU, not in the M chips. So,
It's weird. Like, I mean, this is completely anecdotal. I haven't touched any Game Pass stuff in ages. And that's not even, you know, and that's not me going, oh, hasn't Game Pass been shit? It hasn't. There's been stuff that's come on it that I do actually want to play. But I think it's just been such a good time for games that I've had to actually buy with money.
Yeah. That's going to change this week, though, I think. Maybe.
Do you reckon?
With Open Roads, which is Fulbright company game.
Yep. Excited about
that. On the 28th. So,
but there was the one, oh God, what's it called? Is it Lightyear Frontier? Farming with mechs.
Yes. Is that out already, is it?
That is out. That's on Game Pass. So you've
been all over it, surely.
Yeah, exactly. We should stream that. That might be a funny co-op stream.
If it's four player, hell yeah.
Or a really boring one, who knows? It is, yeah, four player.
Have it ready after Sonic versus Sonic.
That might be plan B.
Yeah, but yeah, Open Roads. Obviously, you know, it's like an indie... interactive kind of, you know, game. I'm hoping it'll be good.
But this, I mean, at the moment with this, like, going back to this story, it feels a little bit like with the GameCube. Like, do you remember how that was like towards the sort of the tail end of it, and it was just like third parties started being like, nah, we're just PS2 and Xbox, you know, the original Xbox we're going to develop for now, we're not bothering with that anymore. It just feels a bit strange that it's going along that sort of route.
Like, the Series S makes sense, and, you know, no doubt they've done well, and no doubt the ratio of S versus X is probably far in the S's favour. And that's good because it's cheaper, but also it's a much lower baseline, and devs have to accommodate both the X and the S.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard kind of anecdotal complaints and issues, and that's why I say Baldur's Gate, they have co-op, etc., etc. But then you have things like the Switch, where devs are happy to work for to a different kind of standard, but then I guess the Switch is so different.
It's worth it for the install base, right?
You've got 100 million people.
it's so different. It's not like, yeah, exactly the same game, you know, but downgraded slightly or maybe more substantially. It's like, we will make a different version for that console because it's worth it because of the sales numbers, whereas this is kind of caught between a lower fidelity, but also... without the huge sales numbers behind it. So it's like, it's kind of worst of both worlds, really.
I genuinely thought, given especially the current economic climate, like, I would have thought the Series S would have been an absolute slam dunk, and it's still very strange to me that Sony seemingly won by still having the more premium option, given that everyone is skint. It's wild.
But they had games out.
They had games.
First-party games.
Yeah. And I still would stand by the fact that a lot of people, like, I seriously think a lot of people just don't care about things like Game Pass. Like, they really don't. And they're quite happy to pick up a console and play, you know, EA Sports FC or whatever, you know, and that's it, really, for the whole year. And that's why it's easier to go with something you already know, rather than, even though the Series S is cheaper.
And so many people moved over from 360 to, you know, to PS4 when that blew up. So, yeah, I don't know.
What's the next story, James?
So, GTA 6's release might slip to 2026 because apparently development has fallen behind. So this is an anonymous source that was talking to Kotaku who said that it had fallen behind, and they said this is apparently why the management also asked everybody to return to the office full-time, because they think the game is slipping to later. So yeah, that's a shame.
It is.
I mean, not surprising, is it?
No.
Like, also, Rockstar can afford to delay these things.
I was going to say,
for a game that's going to probably be the biggest release possibly of all time.
Yeah.
They'd rather delay it, and it was brilliant, than like rush it out, and it's like, oh, hang on, maybe this isn't what we wanted it to be. Like, they will delay us as long as it needs to be to for it to live up to the hype, frankly.
Yeah, I just hope, I mean, I don't believe this will be the case, but I would just hope that if it is being delayed, that's so they're not, you know, putting too much pressure on the staff for a longer period of time, but I imagine they probably are already, but who knows?
I mean, working on a highly anticipated game is giving mad pressure anyway, but also with the kind of return to office, you know, stuff, who knows? Hopefully everyone's okay over there, but the actual news of it potentially missing the 2025 release window, yeah, it's not a surprise, is it, really?
Not a surprise at all, no. And I think it'll be worth the wait. No matter what.
100%, definitely.
But yeah, hey-ho.
It must be a bit annoying for Sony, though, isn't it, with the PS5 Pro, where they maybe were thinking that was going to drive sales for that.
That's true. Yeah, if that all doesn't all synchronise, that'll be annoying for Sony.
Yeah. Boo-hoo, Sony.
Yeah. Do you think it'll be all right?
I think they'll be... I think they're okay. Yeah, well, maybe we can have a whip round. I think they'll probably be right.
I'll chuck in a tenner. We'll just keep Sony going.
That's good, actually. Because if this is delayed, that might make me delay my purchase of a PS5 Pro. So this is all good. It won't. I'll be a day one.
Okay. Have any of you seen this Captain America and Black Panther game trailer?
I haven't. I've heard great things.
Oh, you haven't watched it, Sean?
No, I haven't. Sorry. Describe it to me second by second.
It's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Like, you look at it and you think, I mean, for a couple of seconds, like, you are sort of like, this is film footage, you know, of people, when it's not, because it's all like, you know, computer generated, but it's very impressive. I mean, I don't know what is wrong with me this evening.
Dave's not here, it's fine, you can relax.
I can't fall words and I feel weird because David's not here.
What, do you need to shout at you, James?
Yeah,
can you
just start being aggressive, please?
You fucking prick. Read the newsletter, you twat.
When bits like this happen, this is when we start getting feedback from people going, bloody hell, bring Dave back. Go get this lot in order. Fucking hell.
This is rubbish. James can't even speak.
Oh, I can't speak. Bloody useless for that, Dave.
Could some of you just ask me questions that there's no way that I could have the answers for, like, right now?
Okay, well, what year is this game set?
2025.
I can't but speak. Anyway, yeah, what's this game, James?
So this is Marvel. It's 1943. This is set, and so this is young Steve Rogers.
All right, go on.
What?
What? You just said it was set in 2024.
So that was a joke. Right. It just didn't.
You really gotta get on it.
Sorry,
that was a gag.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't land.
Never mind.
So this is with a young Steve Rogers, you know, as Captain America, obviously, and then also Azuri, which is T'Challa's grandfather.
Okay.
For World War II era Black Panther, and it's not entirely clear what this game is yet, but it is set in occupied Paris, and it's coming out in 2025.
And crucially, Amy Hennig's working on it.
Yes, exactly.
We probably safe to assume a narrative heavy adventure game, which is not to pigeonhole her. Just that's what she's really fucking good at. So I'm more than happy if that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this trailer looked brilliant. It is just a CGI trailer, but yeah, it uses Epic's metahuman stuff, and it does look amazing. I mean, I know like a lot of the Marvel movies, you know, do use CGI, so maybe it's not like a massive like.
Are they not documentaries? Are they not?
No, it turns out computers are actually using the making of the movies.
It's real.
Not all like live effects.
I did wonder how they filmed it.
Yeah, now you know. Even as a CGI trailer looked, it got me really, really excited. Mm-hmm. And the fact Amy Henning is on there as well. I mean, often it's like, a Marvel game, it's not really too inspiring, apart from the, say, Spider-Man games, and I'm sure Wolverine will be good because of people making it. But this one's like, okay.
There was the Guardians of the Galaxy one. That was a brilliant. That was a really, really good one. There's only been one Marvel game that hasn't been great.
I have to say this every time. Yeah, the Avengers game was okay. It wasn't shit.
It was perfectly serviceable. It was a 6 out of 10. There was nothing wrong with it.
It was a 6 out of 10, but obviously everyone expected a 9 because it was the Marvel game. But it just
I thought the trailer looked really, really good. It got me really pumped, even if we don't really know too much about the game itself. But yeah, excited for this now.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Next story is that Resident Evil 9 could be an open world game. So this is following on from Dragon's Dogma 2, which obviously has like expanded the capabilities of the RE engine, and also along with Monster Hunter World as well. And so it looks like it's going to be Resident Evil could be going open world, which I can kind of see. I can see how that would maybe work. If it's like, if it's across a city or something like that, I think that could be quite exciting and quite interesting. But I mean, the last one, Village, had sort of elements that were starting to get towards open world, but not quite.
Yeah, because it kind of had that hub, didn't it? And then you walk to the various kind of different themed monster areas, didn't you? So yeah, I can totally see how it would work. I mean, not on the size of a Metal Gear Solid 5, but I think it could totally work in a city. I think it's open world, there's a checkpoint, checklist, and I don't know. I haven't said that. I'm enjoying exactly that in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so I can't complain too much, but I'm like, I don't know, do I want my Resi games to go in that direction? But I can see how it would work.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
I mean, I really hope they don't do like sort of Resident Evil Village style open world, as in I don't want another countryside to explore with this. I feel that feels really played out to me at this stage of Resident Evil. Like, since Resident Evil 4, there's been this sort of obsession of keep going back to that sort of style, and it'd be nice to go to a city again. I think would be pretty cool.
Do you think you'll be dynamically / relentlessly pursued by like a main villain who's just kind of around? Of it being open world is, I don't know, would it work if you're sort of monitoring what they're doing and trying to avoid them, or is it just they can fucking smash in the wall next to you at any point?
You mean like Nemesis, but just there always?
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah.
Or if it's open world, it's less about like an enemy, but maybe big things happening to the area you're in. So rather than one enemy, it could be, you know, like weather type things, but then maybe that's part of the virus, or whether almost like mini public events you'll get in Destiny, where it'll be like, no, get out of that zone or this and other, because this thing's happening to a certain block of streets or buildings. So
if you did it in a city, you could the sheer volume of people could result in things like, you know, buildings collapsing and stuff like that. It could be fascinating, something like that, you know.
So where's this come from? Sorry, James, is this just guesswork based on what they've been doing with the engine, basically, or is it?
It seems to be guesswork. Yeah, okay, I don't think it's not been confirmed that this is where it's going, but that seems to be the idea.
Fair dues.
Okay,
go on.
Sorry, I was going to move on to the next.
No, that's fine.
Okay, so the final story is Capcom has responded to criticism of Dragon's Dogma 2's paid DLC and performance issues. So, according to the story, this is a... Just wait, Sean.
Let me
read what it says. So, according to VGC, it says the game currently has a mixed reception on Steam. Just over 40% of reviews are positive, and there's also been some unhappiness, it seems, about the DLC, because there are 21 different items that you can buy. These are available for free within the game, but you can also buy them as DLC. But then people are saying it's quite tough to get a lot of these, and the accusation is then that it's been designed this way to then sell more DLC, because people will just get frustrated and have a go. So, wait a minute, Sean. So, this is from Polygon.
You've already given it more context than some of the reports I've seen. So, yeah, go on.
So this is from Polygon. They said, Wake Stones, for example, allow you to revive your character in the middle of combat and are rare enough that players are advised to save them for use during only the most challenging encounters. But now the temptation is there to just buy your way out of trouble for 99 cents. So this is one of the accusations. But then also performance on PC hasn't been great and Capcom are looking into that still. So go ahead, Sean.
Shall we seamlessly segue into what we've been playing?
Yeah.
Are you going to ignore this? Are you going to ignore this? Are you going to ignore the big news? Just because we don't have to just not segue anyway. No, we're staying right on this story. Okay,
no, we'll talk about this stuff. I genuinely think some of the reporting around this stuff has been weird, right? Like to the little borderline dishonest in some cases. Like the way some websites, naming no names, have like highlighted that it's like, oh, like, character customization items are paid DLC, and it's like fucking just the stuff you can buy, as James says, is all free in the game. Like, you are supposed to earn it, and it's not like, in no way is it like a slog. Like, yes, it's, you know, so it's items that help you fast travel, and, you know, and there's people who are saying like, well, I thought the game didn't have fast travel in it. Like, it does, but it's really limited, which we'll get into in a bit. But like, this DLC wasn't available until the game went like actually on sale, right? So all the reviews that came out of this game, everyone's like giving it really high scores. They couldn't have even bought the DLC if they wanted to. So, and then like, and people are like, oh, why did none of the reviews mention this? Now, there's been some people who reviewed the game claiming they didn't know, and saying, oh, it was in the review guide, but I didn't want to read it because I thought it might have spoilers in it. It wasn't in the review guide. It was in a separate document. And I know
because
called
expensive DLC.
Fuck the consumers.pdf. It was
our plan for dollars. And then it's just
how are we going to rinse the customer?
How to JPEG. Turn like, players into payers.
So, to me, you know, as someone who's lucky enough to get and full disclosure, like, got an early copy of the game to be able to play it for review and stuff. Like, I thought it was crystal clear what the DLC was going to be. And to me, for the time I spent with the game, I was just like, if anything, the DLC to me feels a bit scummy just because it's not that helpful, really. Like, it's not, I don't know, it's nothing that particularly worth spending real money on, I would say. The way that Polygon quote frames it is also a bit dishonest, because it's saying, like, it's suggesting that it's like, oh, you've died, do you want to pay a quid to come? But that's not
you don't get a pop-up, Sean, that says, do you want to pay money?
No, you don't. It's just, if you've got wake stones, it's like, do you want to use one of them? Yes or
it
no?
It looks like you're trying to play. Would you like to pay?
It looks like you're rubbish at the game. Do you want to pay some money? I just, and like, the paid DLC isn't like in the game, right? You have to go to the store, like, outside of the game. As far as I've never seen it, right? It's never bothered me.
Well, what's that? You're saying that's fine because it's not actually in the game.
I'm not saying it's fine. I'm just saying, like, this notion that it's like forced upon you or encourages you to spend money on this stuff is, to me, is just absolutely insane.
Is that just because you're too good, Sean, to have to use any of these
elite
items?
At video games. No, it's there's been times I've struggled with the game, and that's just part of it. Like, it's just been so strange the way people have been writing about this. And look at the horrible negative attention it's garnered. It's really, really strange. I mean, I do wonder, like, because there's, you know, there's part of me, like, you know, I said this when, like, Exo Primal came out, in that I was like, I can't believe this game exists for me, because it feels like it's the exact sort of thing I like. It's clearly had a lot of money spent on it. And if slightly murky microtransactions are, like, part of, you know, how you justify a game like that getting made, then I'll kind of accept it. But I do wonder if it's now to the point that, like, the negative attention isn't worth it. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
who knows?
It doesn't seem like it.
But, I mean, for God's sake, like, I've been getting messages from people, I've heard you saying Dragon's Dogma 2 is really good, but I've heard this stuff about the paid DLC. It's like, fucking ignore it. You can just, you don't ever have to know it exists. You can just
can't believe
enjoy
you're
the
DLC Dogma, you prick.
Been really strange. Would you like me to talk about the rest of the game now?
Yes, please.
You may genuinely want to set a timer, because I'm just going to keep going.
I'll do that. Hang on.
What's my limit? I
mean, I've also been playing Dragon's Dogma 2.
do you want to start, Matt?
No, I'm good, actually. I'm 15 minutes into the game.
So, I was a massive fan of the first Dragon's Dogma. Bit of context, I know we talked about it a bit last week, but, you know, so Dragon's Dogma was a game that came out and didn't do amazingly well to begin with, but over the last 12 years since it came out, it's eventually sold millions of copies and was sort of regarded as a bit of a cult hit, which, you know, even though it sold millions, it took ages to do it, and sort of word of mouth sort of grew and grew, and people found that, like, it was quite an awkward game, but it's a very interesting one, and I think it makes up, you know, more than makes up for its awkwardness. And, like, the thing that was interesting about the first game was, A, so it's, you know, like 3D sort of open world action adventure RPG fantasy setting, which initially feels, you know, it's very much like, oh, there is a dragon and he's chosen you as the guy who has to kill him, and everyone's scared because there's a dragon, you've got to go kill the dragon, which is not interesting at all. But then basically about halfway through the game, the story goes absolutely batshit and gets really interesting, and, like, there's a reason why there's a dragon, and it's like this whole, like, it goes really heavy into its own lore, right? There's a whole reason why the dragon exists, and there's this endless cycle of a dragon appearing, someone gets picked to fight it, and then, like, and it's super interesting, and yeah, and it, and like Dragon's Dogma 2, there was this emphasis on, like, there is fast travel, but really, like, the resources you need to do it are incredibly rare. The reason a lot of people got fed up with that in Dragon's Dogma 1 was the way the world was designed. It was basically, there's like two sort of main regions of the map. There's like a southern region and a northern region. And there was pretty much like one route between them. There's like this one sort of coastal path. And God, you had to walk it a lot, like a lot of times during the course of the game. And this sort of, like, Dragon's Dogma 2 sort of immediately solves that, in that the world is just way bigger, and there's so many more routes you can take between places. And yes, there are times where you can't be arsed going somewhere on foot, and you will use either fast travel or there's these ox carts you can get on. And then they sort of, you know, take you to different places. But by and large, like, the travel itself is like an absolute joy, right? So go on, sorry, James.
This is what I wanted to ask you about, because, you see, whenever you'd spoken about Dragon's Dogma, you generally talk about the story and about how this was, you know, how brilliant this was and how... But what about, like, the actual game? Like, is this fun?
Oh, God, like, yeah. So, like, and again, the thing that the first Dragon's Dogma did really well was that, like, so I believe it was some of the people who worked on, like, Devil May Cry did the combat. Mm-hmm. So although you've got, you know, there's your typical sort of fantasy classes, like fighter, mage, and then like rogue or strider, I think they called it. But then there was like these other weird classes. There was like one that's called like the Mystic Knight, who, like, if someone fired magic at you, you could do like a perfect block to like absorb the magic into your shield, and then your shield would glow with that magic type, and then you'd be able to do other abilities with it and stuff. Then there was like the Magic Archer, which is like playing res. You just sort of wave the cursor over a load of enemies and it like targets them all, and then just shoot magic at them all. It was just really, really good fun. Like, the combat is amazing. And again, the first game really sort of lent into, like, there's these huge creatures that you have to fight, and you can climb around on them, and like, even like, you know, you can climb on a griffin and then it just starts flying up in the air and it's fucking terrifying. And you're there just trying to stab its eye so it fucking falls to the ground again. That stuff was like all like so much fun. And that stuff is way more common in this game. So as you are traveling around, there'll be lots of, you know, rank and files sort of goblins or thieves or whatever. And then, yeah, and then a griffin will just crash in out of nowhere, or a massive ogre, or a fucking dragon, right? There's more than one. There's these, like, what they call them, drakes, like effectively like lesser dragons. And they're just, yeah. Like, sometimes they're a pain, but most of the time it's just funny and exciting, and they're just there to ruin your day, but they're so much fun to fight. It's just such a good experience in this game. Like, and I think what's really cool is knowing that there was a sequel to Dragon's Dogma coming. I was like, okay, they'll make the world better, it will look nicer, they'll do stuff to the combat, but, like, how's it going to make the story weird again? Do you know what I mean? Like, how's it going to do that? Is it going to be weird right off the bat? As I say, the story in the first game was genuinely quite boring for the first half, and then it went nuts. This is more interesting right off the bat, and it gets weirder.
I mean, this is the obvious question, but does it benefit from having played the first?
Yes. But I wouldn't like tell anyone they have to play the first. I mean, I wouldn't like, obviously it's 12 years old now, it's aged. I wouldn't like recommend necessarily anyone like run out and play the first, or like when, now that the second is out. Yeah, there have been like some very clear references to the first game that as a fan, I'm like, oh my God, that's such and such a thing. And just, yeah, it's been so, I mean, I've put like 40 hours into it over the last couple of weeks. It's been absolutely nuts, and I don't want to stop playing it yet. It's, as I say, just the experience of traveling around and, like, you know, so you'll be in one city and you know you need to travel somewhere else for a quest, right? Mm-hmm. And not only do you get like a choice of directions you can go, there's like, you know, there'll be several routes there. But then so often, like, you'll forget where you were supposed to be heading because you'll just wander off and be like, oh, shit, there's a path over there. Or no, a monster attacks you and then you get sort of turned around and you end up going a different direction and be like, oh, shit, no, I'm in this place instead. No, actually. And it's just so good. Like, the world is stunning as well. Like, I mean...
That's the focus, isn't it? Because it's like this idea of the journey is the main thing with this, is that it's about getting from place to place rather than... which is one of the reasons why the fast travel is so...
Exactly. Like, it would ruin it. If you could fast travel, or if you were paying money to fast travel as much as you wanted, you're only spoiling it for yourself, really. As I say, that there are times when, you know, say you've just spent an hour getting from one place to another, and then it's the next objective is like, right, you've got to go back. Like, yeah, I'll use a magic stone to teleport back. Thanks, I don't need to see the same route again.
I remember playing the first... See, the first one I played, but only for about 2 or 3 hours, and then I stopped. And I'm aware that is not giving it enough of a shake, really, but I played it on the Switch, and it was quite... As you said, it's 12 years old, and it was not great what I played from that. But I remember in that, you have kind of like a party, right, that you're with in that.
So it has the pawn system. That's P-A-W-N, American listeners. Porn. So basically the lore justification for this is that there's this race of like mercenaries, I guess, called pawns, who will only like they're kind of like, they're not completely mindless, but they are endlessly devoted to the Arisen, which is you, the player character, whoever the dragon chooses to kill the dragon, right? So they will do whatever you say. So you have your main pawn, who you create and you name them and you choose what class they are and everything, and then you can hire 2 support pawns, right? Which are other players' main pawns. Now this was all... What, James, are you smirking at me saying pawn over and over again?
I'm sorry, what's your main pawn, Sean?
He's called Incrediman, and he's usually topless. I've set his skin is set to maximum glisten.
like Edward from Twilight.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, he's great. He was a fighter. He's now a mage. He's got some lovely sort of white robes. He's very handsome.
Had to change careers. I mean,
yeah.
That's quite common, isn't it?
It's really good. He actually comments on that as well. Like another pawn that I had was like, oh, have you always been the same vocation? He's like, no, I used to be a fighter defending our master with shield in hand.
So he's a pretty hardcore pawn, you'd say.
He's a very hardcore pawn. Yeah.
That sounds like you're saying. That's a shame.
Don't know what you're talking about. And basically the whole pawn system is fascinating. A lot of this is from the first game.
that one got me as well.
This is from the first game, but it's been expanded and refined and works a lot better. But basically the interesting thing about the... But I feel like I'm really self-conscious every time I say it now. Pawn system is you hire someone else's pawn. They don't level up when they play with you, right? They don't get stronger, but they do learn about how to fight certain monsters and how to do certain quests, right? And what's interesting about that is it basically means a lot of the quests are designed in a way that, like, you can't really figure them out by yourself, but you can... James...
I'm just thinking, I mean, Sean, could I hire your pawn?
You could hire my pawn, absolutely. You'd have to play the Xbox version. Your pawn. But.
Okay, I'm done.
I missed a few podcasts this week where I talk about this, and no one's ever got on off in the fit of Google.
Well, as I say, I think any other accent, it's very obvious when people are saying pawn or pawn. Do you know what I mean?
Is it, though?
It's just, yeah. Since our English accents are bad, who knew?
I'm done. Sorry, continue.
I'm not done saying porn, though. That's the problem. It's just going to keep going.
It's okay.
So, yeah, they learn how to do certain quests. So there are quests where you'll be given an objective and there's not necessarily any way of like finding out where you need to go or who you need to speak to or whatever. Or there is, but it's quite long-winded or whatever. But the idea is you can hire a pawn who knows, right? Because they've already... I knew he's going to...
Oh, God, James!
You might just have to mute yourself, man. I don't know. I know we tell you not to mute yourself when you're laughing, but... yeah, so you like, and again, this is something they've made way more obvious. So if you're, whatever your currently selected quest is, when you go to the Rift, right? And that's where you're surrounded by pawns, James. There's pawn everywhere. he's actually going to die. This is going to be what finishes him off, so to speak. And basically when you're searching for them, it will tell you if they've done your current quest or not. So then suddenly that quest goes from like, oh, I've no idea what the fuck to do, to then you've got a pawn who's just like, yeah, I've done this, follow me. And then they'll just run off and then you follow them and they, you know, tell you what to do, which is really useful.
So that's if you meet a certain one that knows that, but yes. Often the ones you meet, they may have no idea, but it's just like a throw of the dice.
So when you search, it tells you. Also when you look at your like all the quests you've currently got, it'll tell you which of your pawns know it already.
Okay.
And what's cool is obviously your pawn can be hired by other people. So if someone's further on in the game than you, they could hire your pawn, use it, and then your pawn gets loads of knowledge of like later quests that you've not done. And then vice versa, like someone could hire mine who's already like, because I was lucky enough to be able to play it early. So a lot of people are hiring my guy and then he knows like loads of the main quests up to a certain point. It's such a fascinating system. I still really love it. And it gets weirder because if you hire someone else's pawn, when you dismiss it, when you're done with the pawn, he's bright red. Look at that.
I think James is going to burst. It looks like a tomato.
You can send them a gift, James, with the pawn. When you send the pawn back, you can send them with a gift. And it can be, far as I can tell, anything. And again, this is something the first game did, but I'm already seeing opportunities where you could give someone like quite an important item from later in the game and help them skip stuff from earlier on, right? No spoilers. I haven't tested any of this yet.
Oh, really? Skip certain missions maybe because you've given them a better reward than the mission might give them?
In the first game, there were examples where someone would be like, oh, I need this. I think I talked last week about this guy needs like a magic, but I know it was on the stream I did. That was it. I did a quick Dragon's Dogma stream the other week, in fact. And I was saying, yeah, so like, there's a quest where this guy's like, oh, I want this like magic book, right? And it's really powerful and it'll give you really powerful magic. And that's like a whole quest and it can take, you know, it's like a whole chain of quests and it can take hours. But if you've got a friend who's already done that quest and got the book and sent it to you as a gift before you've done that quest, you can be like, oh yeah, I need this book. It's going to take you ages to get it. And you can go like, no, here you go. I've got it. Cheers. And then you just skip it, right?
But I mean, that's a cool system, but is that robbing them of some of the experience?
It is. Yeah, but that's just sort of, yeah, you're just sort of buying into the weirdness of it, basically. I think it's like, and it's a tool for like speedrunners as well, obviously, right? Like, it's interesting to see how much you can skip by having other people just send you shit from later on in the game. And like, there are so many different ways that the quests can go, right? Even ones that seem really simple. So, as an example, mild spoilers for a very small quest that's like fairly early on in the game. You arrive at this town and this guy sort of comes up to you and he's like, oh, I've lost this orb, right? It's like this gem, the jadeite orb, I think he calls it. And he's like, I've lost it. Like, can you help me find it? Because I'm in huge trouble. If my boss finds out I haven't got it, I'm going to get the shit kicked out of me. He doesn't use those words. And you're like, yeah, okay, I'll find it. And as you're trying to find this orb and then someone else approaches you and it's the guy's boss, right? And he's like, yeah, I'm well aware this guy's lost it. I'm trying to find it. Can you help me find it? So basically, you then you've got two objectives where it's like, find the orb and then who do you give it to, right? And the first guy you talk to is like, yeah, to be honest, if you do give it me, I'm going to sell it and use the money to get away from my boss because he's awful. Fair enough. So eventually you find it. But there's a forgery shop. There's a shop where a guy, he sells like rare stuff, but he will also forge items for you. And he will forge anything from a bit of fucking grass that you've picked up to, for example, a rare gem that you found as part of a quest. So you can get him to make a forgery. So I got him to do that, then took the original to the first guy because he seemed nicer. And I was like, here you go, here's the real one. He's like, cheers. And then I went to the prick and gave him the forgery. And I was like, ha, this is great. He's going to have no idea. And I gave it to him. And he's like, right, cool. There's a forgery shop just down the road. So we'll just check it's the real one. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
So you've got to walk with him to the shop. And he's like, we just want to check this is the real deal, if that's okay. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, this will take me a little while. And this guy's like, right, I've got other business to deal with, so I'll come back in a bit. And then you go to the guy in the shop and you're like, here's 1,000 gold. Could you please tell him it's the real one? And he's like, no. And it's like, right, here's 2,000 gold. Can you please lie for me? And he's like, nope, not doing it. And you can see the guy like walking back towards you, and you're just like, I'm about to get my fucking head kicked in. 6,000 gold, please lie to him and tell him it's the real one. And eventually he gives in.
Can you not murder the shopkeeper?
You could. You actually could. You can kill anyone in this game.
Well, can you kill the guys pretending you're going to kick off of you?
Yes. Yeah, that would be an option. I believe you can also rat out the first guy that you speak to, and then you just, yeah, the boss gets his minions to kick the shit out of him. And yeah, so I ended up convincing the guy to lie on my behalf, and I got away with it, as far as I'm aware. Afterwards, all my pawns were like, oh, I don't feel good about this. I think there's going to be repercussions. And I'm like, yeah, but for now, it's fine.
Classic pawns.
So there's just, even within a little quest like that, there's just so many different ways it could play out, right? You could just get the orb and just give it to whoever, and then that's that. But then the forgery stuff comes in. There's another quest where there's like this kid who's like, I need to go on a journey to this other town, but I need help packing my bag. And he's like, right, I'm likely to face like these monsters, so I'm going to need like something that's good against this status effect, something that's going to help Cyclopses not notice me, and some healing stuff or whatever. And then you just get a completely free choice of what items you give him. So I'm assuming you could just give him a load of shit, and I assume he has trouble on the journey and maybe dies. I don't know. I gave him all the correct stuff, and he came back, and I was like, oh, thank fuck for that. Just loads of little things like that, like in side quests that you just like, man, this could probably play out really differently.
On some of the podcasts I've listened to talk about this, there feels like there's so many stories with what could, from the outside, seem to appear really simple quests, but with all the various emergent stuff that can happen, and then all the various variables that can happen within those emergent stuff, it sounds, like so many people's journeys and stories will be different based on what they did in their missions and how they tackled certain parts of the game.
Yeah, totally.
So that's what's interesting, because, I mean, I was just thinking of The Witcher, like The Witcher 3 with that, but then it's not really the same, because with that you don't really get different consequences or whatever, but it's just the fact that stories kind of just don't go where you're expecting them to.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of interesting. I mean, but like, this is more...
sorry, go on.
This is more based on the fact that, you know, you can change so many variables and it really does significantly alter how things play out.
Like,
is this the same for the main story as well, do you know?
It's not entirely clear. I think the main story will change once you're in like New Game Plus and you've got more knowledge of what's coming and a bit more freedom about how you do things. Because that was how the first game operated, because you were in this position where it's like, well, actually, I know where to get certain items before certain things happen, and you can start fucking with it. So I don't know if this one has like the same sort of scope for that yet. I mean,
does this have a story length that's like an Oblivion where it could be hundreds of hours, or could you actually mainline the main story relatively quickly?
I think you could mainline the main story relatively quickly. I think what I've done is wrong. So there's like two nations in the game. You start off in this one, and then eventually the story calls for you to go to this other one. I went to the second nation before the story wanted me to. And like had like an amazing experience, because I had to like sneak in, right? Because there's like a big gate at the border, and like they want to see your papers and stuff.
I know, bloody hell, they're the worst.
And they want to see your papers and stuff. I didn't have any, but there's other ways, right, to sneak through. And then so I traveled like the whole like length of the map, basically. and then eventually was like, right, this has been really fun, but I should probably go back. And like, there weren't any quests or anything. It was just, there was like, you know, there's other towns and cities and stuff, and like, and it was really cool visiting them, but none of it felt, I was like, yeah, I really should just go back to where all my quests are and stuff. But when you do, when you get sent to the other country as part of a main quest, suddenly it like comes alive, right? And people are approaching you with missions and stuff. I was like, right, I had a really good time doing that initial sort of exploration, but I probably could have saved myself about 10 hours and not done that, right?
And just waited for the game. Yeah.
And this has been an interesting thing, just even among people I know who are playing it. Like, it does encourage you to just fuck off and explore and do whatever you want. But I think after the time I've spent with it, part of me is like, probably do let the quests guide you initially, at least, until you've sort of got a working knowledge of, like, you know, a fair bit of the map, and then worry about, like, exploring.
Well, that's kind of weird for a game that's built on that stuff, that you did that and it didn't feel as satisfying. You kind of thought it'd be like, well, it may not be in the way the game intended me to play, but look at these adventures I had, look at how I did it. And
well, yeah, and it was worth it. I think it's just, yeah, just being time poor as we are. Part of me is like, maybe I should have just waited until I was told to go here, and then it would have been a smoother experience. But then also, I will never forget the experience of like sneaking through and like fighting my way through to this other country. Like, it was like such a good bit, but at the cost of, yeah, sort of things feeling sort of relatively lifeless when I got there, as opposed to now, where, as I say, there's like all these stories and characters booting off in this second like nation. I absolutely adore it, in case that isn't clear. I knew I probably would, but there was every chance that, because, you know, there's stuff in the first game that's missing. Like, a lot of the classes from the first game aren't in this one.
Paid DLC.
Paid DLC.
Isn't there? There's more stuff coming though, isn't there? Because they are adding, like, with patches, they're adding. Because one of the other complaints I read was about how it's quite difficult to like have multiple characters. Like, you can't do that yet. Is that right?
Have like one set. Well, I think you can only have one save, and you can't start a new game once you've made a character, which is weird. I don't know if there are capital R reasons for that.
That's one of the things that's coming in part of the new patch.
Yeah, it's just been such a good time. Like, just the joy of discovering the world. Like, it looks so good. Like, I know people moaning about the performance and stuff. Yeah, it's 30 frames, occasionally a little bit lower than that. But like, the fact that people are so upset by it that they're actually plotting to murder loads of NPCs. Have you seen this stuff?
Yeah, I heard that. to improve the frame rate, wasn't it? They were like,
yeah, I don't even know if it'll work. It's like, because the frame rate's definitely worse in like towns and stuff, right? Where there's loads of people milling about trying to get on with their day. So you can tell that it's like, that's a big performance hit. Because I think it's one of those where it's very CPU heavy. So it's not actually like it looking as good as it does is not the reason. It's all the weird physics-y stuff and the behavioral stuff that's going on that slows it down. So some people are like, oh, well, if I just murder everyone, that'll speed things up. It's like, yeah, that's a normal thing to think and do, isn't it? It's good.
How does it compare, like, visually to like Baldur's Gate 3? Like,
oh, it's looks nice in the Baldur's Gate 3 for sure.
Because I didn't think that looked that great, honestly.
Yeah, what you mean? It's certainly in a lot of places. I mean, by all means, play this back in 10 years and we can have a laugh about it. There are times where it looks fucking real. Like, it's absolutely insane how good. It's the lighting and stuff, like, and like I say, the behavior. Like, when you're walking down a path and then a griffin fucking lands in front of you, like, the movement of all the grass and the trees and everything, you can see there's all the calculations of like the how the air's moving everywhere. Like, it just looks so good. Nighttime is absolutely terrifying. Like, it is pitch black unless you've got a torch, and also ghosts start coming out. There are reasons why you...
Of the torch?
Of the torch.
Oh, sorry, ghosts start coming out, but not of the torch.
No, just out of the air. Where do ghosts come from? Haunted mirrors,
spirit realm.
There you go. It's just incredible what like Capcom have done with this one engine. Like, the range of games that, like, the fact this is the same game that was running, you know, like Monster Hunter on the Switch or whatever, is nuts. Like, how different this looks. The fact that it's a huge open world. There's no loading screens. Obviously, there's an initial one, but after that, it's all completely seamless. It's absolutely wild.
You keep talking about the kind of adventure. I mean, would is there any comparison between something like Breath of the Wild where there was, you wouldn't know what's around the corner or even what if there was a corner? Mm. And that was a fascinating and what was so good about Breath of the Wild, mm. just not knowing what was happening and where you can go, what mm. you could chance upon. Is it that kind of yeah. level of...
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah, like,
that sounds there's, good.
Again, it's not wanting to spoil stuff. It's one of those games where you don't... Like, I could tell you what happens in the main story and it might not actually affect your enjoyment that much, but I could tell you about a thing I spotted and a cool little adventure I went on because of it, and that would ruin it more. Do you know what I mean? Mm. There are just things like you'll be walking around and then I spotted like some ruined architecture and was like, that looks really different. It had like a sort of Celtic design to it rather than like the stuff I'd been seeing previously. I was like, I wonder if that's significant. And it totally was. And following that was like a whole, like a really nice experience. Just, yeah, little stuff like that. And it just properly adds up. And I think what's really cool as well is like, it has this thing they call the loss mechanic, where in the first game, if you got the shit kicked out of you repeatedly, your like maximum health would reduce, right? Like temporarily, like next, you know, you could like use items. There were items that healed you, but then there were items that raised your maximum health back to full, right? In this game, the latter is not a thing. Like you can heal yourself to your maximum, but that maximum will reduce over time, like as you get into fights, as you're on a journey. But every time you camp or you rest at an inn or whatever, it goes back up. So you'll get into these scrapes where you're like, I am in a bad way now. Healing items are only doing so much. I need to find a campsite and not get into too many fights in the process. And that stuff is really fun. It can be quite frustrating if you sort of you end up in a point where like you've hardly got any healing items and you the loss mechanic has really fucked you. Like you've got basically really low maximum health. It can be quite frustrating because you need to avoid basically any combat, which is really difficult to do. But it's worth it because most of the time it sort of rides that line of being like a bit tense and forcing you to be careful. And then when you find a campsite, it's like fucking brilliant. And then you cook some meat, which weirdly there's like live action footage of. Have you heard about this? Whenever you cook food in the game, there's just some actual filmed footage of some meat cooking on a fire.
That's brilliant.
It's
I like that.
It's okay. So strange. It's fine. I don't care. It's just a weird thing to have done.
Have they got that for any other things? Like, you know, like when you're in a bar, like, you know, like
no,
somebody picking up a pint and having a drink and it's like a real person doing it, you know?
Literally just cooking meat. And meat is the only thing you can cook when you camp as well. Even though you can pick up other, like, you know, there's like fruit and veg and stuff that you can eat through the menus. When you're at camp, you are cooking a steak and that's it. Like, it's so weird. What else? There's so much stuff to go on about. The pawns can... Oh, no, James is going to fucking start again.
No, I'm over that now.
They can spread diseases between each other, James. There's a disease they can catch.
So you can spread disease with your pawn?
You can spread disease with your pawn. It's called Dragon Blight, and I won't spoil what it does, but it's genuinely terrifying. And like the game makes you aware that it's a thing, but there are like signs you have to look out for. So if you hire a pawn who's got Dragon Blight, you can pass it on to your pawn, and then you have to like watch like their eyes start to go red and they start like ignoring your commands or telling you to fuck off.
Is there any protection for this, Sean?
No. Okay. No protection available, other than throwing your pawn into the sea.
Or a bush.
Or a bush.
Once a pawn dies, is it permadeath? Or
No. So the pawn always... Pawns never actually die. They just go back to the rift. And then you can summon them again. There's this whole disease. And it's just been fascinating watching the community sort of work out how this disease thing works and what the results are of it. I mean, if I looked it up, and I'm glad I did because it's horrible... if you really don't want any spoilers, then don't look it up. But I would personally, because it's kind of incredible what it does and like the impact it has on the game is fascinating.
But is this something that can affect the whole like entire community, or is it just kind of isolated to your game?
It's isolated to your game.
40% of the Dragon's Dogma kind of players have this, and it's spreading. And so you have to work together to fix it.
The theory is that it's when someone starts New Game Plus, their pawn then has this disease and they can pass it on.
Oh, that's interesting.
So
okay.
It's like, so at the moment, there aren't loads with it, but as time goes on, there's going to be more and more and more, right?
And can they be cured? Sorry.
The only way, I think my understanding is the only way to cure it is if your pawn passes it on to another one. Or if your pawn dies while they've got it. So there's
also
Yes.
Or tag.
Yeah. I thought you meant the film then. I was like, no.
No, it's not that many ways.
So yeah, there's a lot of people who are just like, yeah, if your pawn's eyes go red, just throw them into the sea and then summon them again, it'll be fine. So it's just like COVID, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
R.I.P.
Yeah, just loads of weird shit in it. And it's fascinating to me. I love it. It doesn't put its best foot forward. It's a slow start. If you decide to check it out and you get like, and you're an hour in and you're just like, I'm just walking around shooting things with arrows and all the dialogue's really weird. The dialogue's never good, right? It's never, the sort of old English stuff, I'm fine with it. It's clearly done sort of for a laugh. And, you know, 90% of the voice actors are really sort of on board with it. But it's never, you know, comparisons to like The Witcher 3 before, the writing's like the situations are really interesting and the scenario is really interesting, but the moment to moment dialogue is never like particularly emotive or anything, you know. But I mean, fine. I absolutely love
it. Yeah, it's very like ye olde, yes. Squire, etc., yeah. etc. Et
I really hope you persevere with it, Matt. I know you've got Final Fantasy VII to sort out. And James, I think you would really like it too. Yeah. I'm not going to try and. I do think Dave would like it if he can get past the, like, maybe set it to like a foreign language or something.
I'll put on mute.
Mute all the speech. The combat and the exploration is so good. It makes, like, I was never a big Skyrim guy, but it reminds me of the stuff I liked about Skyrim, just going for a fucking wander and finding beautiful, cool stuff. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, the idea about it being, you know, about rewarding curiosity and just adventuring around, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Yeah. That sounds really, really exciting.
Yeah, man.
I've got Final Fantasy VII Rebirth to play first, but this is on the system.
You like to talk?
Downloaded, installed, ready to go.
Would you like to talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Matt? Because I've talked for a long time.
I haven't got much more to say. Okay. I mean, I'm basically still playing it, really. I'm in the Junon region, which is like the second large open area do you go through, and yeah, I'm still basically making sure I do every single possible thing before I move on. I could have got through a lot further in this game had I not suddenly decided that I have to do everything before moving on. I haven't got much more to say. I'm still,
I mean,
still
you,
loving
are you
it,
enjoying,
still enjoying it.
Doing everything, or is it just a weird sort of compulsion?
No, I can't stop it. It's okay. Really, really compelling. I guess a lot of people might just see the things you do, such as like scanning a certain number of enemies, or, you know, going for the various combat missions, or following these birds that take these crystals to, you know, doing this and the other, or just doing various side missions, or playing Queen's Blood against various people, and all the other various mini games. They might see that as busy work, but it's enjoyable enough for me. I've really kind of barely seen story. Really, because there's some cutscenes at the beginning, a little tiny one as I went to Junon, and now I'm just kind of back into the open area, the open zone with all the various kind of things to do. So haven't had an awful lot of story, really. But so that's the only thing really that might push me forward to maybe not complete every single side mission. But the only reason I'm kind of doing this was because when I play Rebirth, I didn't intend to do everything in that game. And then I kind of ended up, I did do that, but apart from one side mission that I missed, because at that point I was like, oh, I'll do some, I just didn't bother with that one particular one, and then you couldn't go back, and I'm like, and it's always like, kind of, you know, I've always been thinking about that one bloody side mission I didn't do, and I could have done it all. But so this time I'm like, I'm not making that mistake again. I'm gonna do everything I can until I decide I'm not going to. I think I'm only like 27 hours in.
Is that all?
So I've got another 60 odd hours to go at
Is
least.
It? Fuck.
I wonder if I will stop doing everything at one point, but who knows? I'm still absolutely loving the game. I think it looks absolutely gorgeous. Cool. It's
you're
a joy to play.
Keep going, isn't it? If you're enjoying it, just keep doing all that stuff.
Don't listen to James. He keeps going with stuff he hates. He doesn't.
Not always, but it does happen quite frequently.
Yeah, I'm always towers to climb, these enemies to fight, these things to do. It's like, for whatever reason, it's grabbed me. And I'm having a blast so far doing that.
Oh, good.
If you're on to me, I guess we can talk about this. I also last week got to use an Apple Vision Pro.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got one at work, basically.
How was it?
it. I mean, I guess I can class myself as an Apple fanboy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in, like, you know, a Discord where we talk about Apple stuff. I buy lots of things day one because I'm an idiot. And I will rush home and watch WWDC, which is their Apple kind of show, mm-hmm. when they announced iOS, etc. So I guess you can say I'm an Apple fanboy. And yeah, it's probably not worth the $3,500. No. I will say it's an incredibly impressive product. Even when you first put it on, and whereas with a lot of VR, and this isn't a VR headset, it's spatial computing. That's what Apple have called it. But with a lot of other VR, AR headsets, mm-hmm. you'll go in and when you have to kind of adjust kind of the lenses, maybe that'd be a physical thing on the device, maybe that'd be some kind of software. For this, you put it on your head and it, you know, this UI appears in the environment you're mm-hmm. in, where, and whether that's your physical, whether that's like the office or building or the room you're actually physically in physical space, mm-hmm. or this virtual environment you can turn on by turning the digital crown on the headset. But you see this UI and it basically says, look at these two dots, and then the lenses just like change. You can feel them like moving to align mm-hmm. perfectly. Mm-hmm. So there's no like change your IPD settings or go to here, go there. It has a battery, so it's got like a braided cable from the headset into this, you know, just like small battery pack. I put it in my pocket. It wasn't an issue. Okay. I didn't feel too tethered. You know,
I mean, yeah, like I've done that like
it got in the way.
Done that with the quests plenty of times, not really an issue.
I guess, you know, I felt worse when I've had the quest or whatever connect to a PC. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother me too much. The only issue is that even that battery pack has only got 2 hours of battery life. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's something weird. Yeah, so like all the UI and the whole headset is controlled using eye tracking, not with a controller, not with anything else. So, and that took me only a very, very short time to get used to. At first, I was looking at the UI, and you'll see what looks kind of like a mixture between the Apple Watch UI and iPad and iOS. You know, it seems very familiar if you've used any Apple product, which is definitely one of the benefits. But, you know, at first I was maybe moving my head around as you would do with a headset. But then very quickly, you know, you're just looking around with your eyes. And because, you know, your eyes have pretty much pinpoint kind of accuracy, like some of the UI elements to like close a window you've got open or to scroll, you can look at something really, really small and, you know, use your fingers to tap and go up and down. It's not like, mm-hmm. say, on... again, other VR headsets or other things maybe use on phones or on the web where you've got like incredibly small UI kind of things to work with and feels a bit fiddly. Mm. Because your eyes are looking at this thing and it can be totally small because you've got pinpoint accuracy with your eyes, it really, really works actually. Cool. Like surprisingly well. Within moments, I was getting used to it. Mm. In terms of some experiences, one thing that a lot of people are raving about is there's this dinosaur experience. Mm-hmm. But I will say, first of all, graphically, it looks absolutely amazing. Mm. But what you're seeing is you've got the headset on, you open the app, and essentially this kind of window appears on the closest wall to where you're looking. So if you're in, you know, whatever room you're in, the closest wall, there's this kind of it doesn't encompass your entire view. It's just, I mean, it's hard to describe a size, but a large portion of this wall in front of you, it shows this like dinosaur-like environment. And then a dinosaur two kind of come up and then they swing around and they're kind of like looking at things and they're running away because they hear another dinosaur, but you can't step into that environment. Like, right. It's not like other VR things where, you know, you'll look down and you're in mm-hmm. the rainforest or you're on the moon. Like, you're just looking at it, at a wall in front of you. And if you go towards that wall, which is what I did because I wanted to be in amongst the dinosaurs, it disappears because it's on the wall and it's kind of like there to protect you. So instantly I was like, this is really weird and kind of off-putting.
It's more like passive, isn't it? It's like passive consumption of this stuff rather than interactive
experience.
It's not immersive. Yeah. It's like me watching like a 180 kind of those VR like videos It's just, I mean, like, so at one point it's a little bit like, you know, those billboards we've seen in Japan and other places where it's like a billboard in like a city center and it looks like the thing is actually coming out of the billboard, with that 3D effect. It kind of did that at one point where the dinosaur came up and it kind of poked its head out of the wall, out of the screen, and then turned around and the tail came out. And yeah, graphically it looked incredibly detailed. But I was just kind of like looking at it thinking, yeah, I don't know. I thought I'd be in and amongst the environment, and I wasn't, and that was kind of strange. There's this game they've got which is kind of like unpacking but in AR, in you know, AR. And but so you get this board in front of you, and I play one level where it looked like a college dorm. You see things like a bed and some kind of bits of furniture, but there's all sorts of grey parts of this small this location. And then to your left, you have arcades. I think it had like a games console, some like tape decks, and you basically grab them. You know, to your left, and you move them over to this physical kind of, it's almost like a diorama, mm-hmm. this location in front of you. I will say one thing is that you can move the board, and you can like make it big, you can make it small, but wherever you place it, it is locked into place. Like, that is so rare for any kind of game in VR or AR which uses objects that are in your physical space, because often they kind of like jiggle or they move, or they're not, or sometimes they move with you. You have all the VR experiences where like the whole like game will kind of move forward or back depending on how good the game is. But this thing is just like, I put it next to me and I made it big, and like it was just locked solid, and that does a lot for like the immersion. This game is like, you know, quite nice music. It was very relaxing. I can imagine why you can have it kind of in front of you, sat down, and you're, you know, doing unpacking like things in AR. It looked really nice. Again, you can get really, really close to like the diorama, the small environment. It looks really, really nice. There's no kind of screen door effect on the headset, which is where you'd often see like the lines in between the pixels. In fact, like the pass-through is incredible. When I put the headset on, I then thought, oh, actually, what I want to do is I want to send a spatial video to the headset. Now, spatial video is something that they've enabled on the Pro Max phones, and essentially it's you turn it on in settings, but when you record a video in landscape, you can turn on spatial video. And what that does then is, I mean, I don't know on technical terms, but essentially it captures a lot more 3D information about the picture and about the video.
It's just like the 3DS video camera.
Is it,
like,
yeah, is it just using two lenses basically to make a 3D image?
Yeah. And again, heard loads, you know, I watched Apple's keynote, sounded really amazing, saw the, you know, saw when they announced Apple Vision Pro, how immersive these things are. Again, those, the videos are quite sad. It was like someone like with a headset on, like watching like a memory or whatever, and whatever. I put it on, and maybe it's a video I shot, which wasn't very good. It was just like, I went to a concert LED was singing in a few months ago, and I thought I'd do like a panning shot around the audience. Again, you press play, and I thought I would be fully in the environment. Now, I didn't know how it was going to work, so I just had my phone at the time. But I was like, Apple going to work some magic? No, again, I'm kind of just watching this thing in front of me. Now, this screen was definitely smaller than what I was seeing on the dinosaurs were, but it was, you know, it was 2 or 3 feet in front of me. And it was just, it wasn't a huge screen. And the video definitely had some depth, but I wasn't like, oh, fucking hell, it's like I'm there. It just didn't feel like that at all. And again, maybe it was the quality of the video I took. There's every chance of that. There's like a moon, like a Mars rover thing you can have in front of you, and you can make it massive and you can look around it. And again, that felt really, really solid. It wasn't moving around the environment at all. It's just there. You can flip dials, flip switches, all that kind of stuff. Here's the most impressive thing I saw.
Pornography.
And I feel a bit, it was pornography, actually. What have you been playing, James? No, like, and this is, I've been thinking a lot about this, but the most impressive thing I saw was YouTube.
Really?
Massive.
See, that, this is what I've heard from so many people saying that, like, the video experience is what is incredible with this.
So when I tried it, we didn't actually have any, like, movies downloaded. I think we do have some movies on the device now installed. But I was like, I haven't. Let's just see what, like, the media stuff is like. So go into YouTube, and you can make, like, the screen as big as you possibly want. And, you know, I put the Dune 2 trailer on, made it full screen. And I was like, oh, hang on, I think I get this now. Like, I've tried to watch movies on Quest 2 and PSVR probably back in the day, and other VR headsets. And, you know, yes, you have these like, apps where you can sit in a cinema screen and watch it on a huge screen, but why wouldn't anyone ever do that? The quality is rubbish. Watch it on your TV if you've got half-decent TV.
Yeah.
But this, I'm
wondered,
like, oh, no.
Like, a few times, because I've got, like, Blade Runner 2049 on 3D DVD, right? 3D Blu-ray, even, God, what I'm talking about. And, yeah, part of me is like, oh, would it be worth getting a Blu-ray drive to do like a really high quality rip of that and then play it through the Quest? But I don't know. Like I said, I'd probably rather watch it on the telly and be able to like eat snacks without having to lift the heads up a bit.
See, I've tried it a couple of times with PSVR 2, and it's like, it's much better than the original one was in terms of like resolution and everything, but it still feels cumbersome, and I still would rather just be sitting on my sofa, you know, like looking at a TV screen.
Quality is never good, but oh my God, like watching this, I made the screen as big as possible, and it was absolutely massive. I mean, like, God knows what the equivalent is would be in inches, but it was absolutely huge. I mean, I had to like kind of move my head to see all the four corners, this huge screen. Yeah, and like the 4K Dune 2 trailer on YouTube, it looked absolutely crystal clear. Now, I'm sure, you know, if you're like a proper TV aficionado, there might be some issues, but I couldn't see any pixels. It wasn't blurry. It was just like, it felt like a 4K video right in my face on a massive screen. And I was like, oh, I think I get this. Not that I'm going to spend, or that anyone should spend, $3,500 for this. But I'm like, why is it? I have all this technology, all the stuff they built, all the great experience and the UI and the eye tracking and using your fingers. And like the thing that's impressed me the most is just a big YouTube video, which I thought,
but then do you remember when PSVR came out and there were all these new games with it? And we were all just like, yeah, but how about fucking Res though?
Maybe it's kind of like that, yeah. How about that experience? But that's even better. I was like, how could this work for productivity? So I had, you know, Dune 2 there, and you can move these windows, you can make them as big as you want. If I have my MacBook or Apple computer, you can kind of make a big version of that screen as well if you wanted to. But I had that. I had like iOS notes to my right, had this like keyboard, which you can move around in 3D space. And I was like, I can see why this would work productivity wise. If you've got something on YouTube, maybe you're monitoring it, making notes, or maybe you're watching a stream, you can have the notes there, and it felt natural to type on a keyboard just in front of me.
That's impressive.
Because it's all locked into place and it doesn't feel like shaky, that really kind of adds to the immersion. So it's interesting. I kind of left with some, mixed feelings. I think there's only like a couple of games. One's like Fruit Ninja. We haven't got that or didn't have it installed. But the movie experience and kind of productivity, which is what they're highlighting, obviously, is what they want to push this into. That was really, really impressive. So I'm going to go back to it when there's more stuff out for it, or when they have an update or two. But very interesting. I mean, it feels very, very first gen Apple product. Yeah. You know, it feels very. Very much like they're waiting for the experiences and stuff. But I'm glad I got to try it. So, I mean, like the pass-through quality was excellent as well. I could read text, I can do all sorts, but no like issue at all. Sorry, James.
So like, I mean, okay, maybe like 5 years down the line when this has been revised further, because it will be, they'll just keep iterating on this presumably if it's doing okay. And presumably also the price will probably go to like $1,000 or something like that instead. Would this be more tempting, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so I've seen... So this is a Vision Pro. People are saying, obviously, you can work on the Vision and maybe a Vision SE back in, a few years down the line. I saw a story the other week saying, the next Vision or Vision Pro could be, $2,500 cheaper. I was like, wow, that's still a grand. That's still or a grand and a half, whatever it's going to be. It's still, like, much more than many made devices. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what price this will have to be to make me kind of... want to get it. I also think, when we got Quest 3 and when we got PSVR 2, I took them home for the weekend and played them and stuff. And you can do it with a VR headset. You can take it, play the games, have a great time. Like when I bought a PSVR, James, and we played, GT7 and No Man's Sky. But this really, truly feels like it. You can't use this for an hour or two and get the experience. It feels like if you're using Mac and iOS and stuff, you kind of need to use this for a week. And every day to really see how it affects productivity and whatnot. I didn't get trying like the persona face, the video
that's
calling
stuff.
I was going
to ask you, did you do like the avatar thing?
No, I'm sure someone at work probably knows someone else with one, but no, we didn't try that. But I don't know I don't know because that with a Quest you can plug into your PC, you can play old Steam games with PSVR. It does have a library, but we wish it was bigger. But this, it's never going to have that. So, I don't know. I don't know what this needs to do to.
Yeah, because surely, like, with it costing as much as it does, the install base is always going to be pretty small. So, not a lot of incentive for developers to get on board unless Apple are paying devs to just make, like, showcase stuff for it.
I think there's always an opportunity when any new hardware comes out for any dev, if they want, they've got the time and they're proactive enough to get in there day one, because you can make a real impact and you know, even with a small audience, people can see your product for what it is on the new hardware. Maybe you get a better relationship as well with like the hardware manufacturer. So mm-hmm. I think if there are some devs out there who want to make a name for themselves, get out there and mm-hmm. make something for Vision Pro, and you might find, you know, popularity will increase because you're there in a very small pool. Mm-hmm. But I can't see many developers deciding to develop for the $3,500 mm-hmm. Vision Pro right now. But
I mean, Netflix didn't think it was worth it, did they? Because they haven't.
No, but there's no Spotify, there's no. Yeah. I think there's another app that there isn't one at the moment. I don't know. I'm glad I got a chance to try it, and I'll be trying it again when more things come out. But yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird one.
Fair dues. James.
Yeah. I mean, apart from Helldivers 2, which I've been mm-hmm. playing, I think I've clocked over like 20 hours of that now, I think, really. And because it's just brilliant, and it's just what's so good about it is that you can just pick it up and play for 20 minutes or whatever, or even like 10 minutes. You know, there's so many times recently when I've switched on my PS5 just to, and I thought, okay, I'm going to play like a Dragon or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then the first icon in there is like Helldivers, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to play that for a bit.
See, that's what I'm not, like, that's what I'm missing playing it on PC, that mm-hmm. immediacy. Like, I have to really plan to spend an evening with it because on PC, it's, you know, they don't have that sort of seamlessness mm-hmm. to it. But yeah, I can imagine that is a lot of fun.
It's just so tempting just to play, just to think, oh, I'm next, you know, I'm close to getting to the next level. I could just do a couple of missions and I'll be there, you know, and unlock some more stuff. And I've been mostly just playing with randoms like the whole time, and it generally works pretty well. The community seems quite nice. I mean, I've only been kicked once or twice, you know. I mean, I got kicked by one, like in one game.
You were going to talk about this.
That was another incident. But in general, I was kicked in one game because I was doing an objective too soon, apparently, and so they weren't happy about that.
Were they trying to collect the other kind of samples?
Yeah, they're trying to collect the mission. They were trying to collect everything, and it's like I was just like, okay, that's fine, but I can still progress this a bit. And they were like, no, we're not going to do this.
So
and
then square, we've got.
One person going nuts because like, who called the evac? We've got loads of objectives to do, and it's
I wasn't even doing that. It was just people get really worked up about stuff, and it's still brilliant. It's so good. But I mean, the other thing I played this week was Rise of the Ronin, because we were given a code for this, and I've been playing it mostly over the weekend because it came out on Friday. And I mean, it's an open world adventure game that's set in like mid 19th century, when Commodore Perry comes to open up Japan, you know, to foreign trade. And I mean, I've always found this a very interesting time in Japanese history as well, because it's the time when there's this sort of like forced modernization like takes place, and like how does the state manage to adjust itself to this new reality but still retain what it is? And it's very interesting. So it's a good time to set it. I mean, it's different to, because like Ghost of Tsushima is set like in like 1200 whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's like hundreds of years before, isn't it?
It's like way back. So this is a lot more sort of I would say sort of modern, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you play the part of like a Ronin who's caught up in all this that's going on. And from the outset of the game, there's a really extensive like character customization like setup. You can create many, many things from this if you really want to. And you can even like save like codes for your creations, and then people can download them. So you can whatever you're going with, you know, and so at the start of the game, you basically set up two characters, which are like these sort of, they're called like sort of twin blades. And I think it's supposed to be like, in my case, I think it was supposed to be like, it's like a brother and sister kind of setup. And then something happens at the beginning of the game where basically you have to make a choice as to which one you're going to stick with as your main. Yeah. And then the other one, something happens to them, and that is driving what happens with the story. So the prologue, I mean, with the prologue, the prologue's pretty good because it sets up you trying to assassinate like Commodore Perry, like right at the start, which on this ship, which is pretty interesting. And then this is when it starts throwing at you all the systems and how things work, because Ghost of Tsushima had like all the parry systems, and it had like different stances and everything that you could unlock, but with this is on another level in terms of like how many systems this throws at you. And I mean, I'm still not fully on board with all of that. I mean, I'm using at the moment what is working for me, but I haven't really started to unlock and started to figure out all the different paths there are, because this has a like a very extensive like leveling up system as well. And there's also like different like combat tactic systems that you can unlock and that you can specialize in and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, the combat is great. It's straight up very, very good. I mean, it's mostly based on like the parrying system, which I generally am not a huge fan of, but in this, it's reasonably generous where you don't feel that you're getting too cross about it. But once you finish the prologue, you get then chucked out into like the into an open world, basically, you know, where you start to sort of explore. And it's got that usual mix of sort of, you know, main encounters and side missions and stuff like that. But the open worlds, like, they don't really give you much guidance, like, to begin with, which is kind of nice, because then you start kind of exploring around and, you know, having a look. And it's such... this is such a strange game, like, visually, because at times it looks brilliant. Like, it looks really beautiful, like, out in the countryside sometimes. And it has that similar thing to Ghost of Tsushima with, like, the, you know, like, wavy sort of, like, grass, you know, from the wind and all that kind of thing. It looks brilliant. But then you get to, the city, and it looks... almost like a PS3 game, like quality. Like, it looks really bad. Like, it looks really, and also there's it's quite janky as well in places. You know, like your horse will, you know, get caught on things, and you know, you get caught on things, and it feels very, I wouldn't say unfinished, but it doesn't feel so polished, particularly in the cities. Like, in the city also, the other thing is there's hardly any people either, which feels very strange, because this is supposed to be like a bustling port town. And there's hardly anyone there. But I thought I'd figured this out, because one of the loops in the game is that when you go into a new region, it has the usual thing of like having like flags or whatever that you hit. So then you sort of, that's the fast travel points that you clock as you go through the game. But then it opens up the map slightly, so you get an idea of what's there. But then what it has these huge like sort of red like dots that appear on the map, which are called like public order problems. And this is where you go there, and there are like, you know, basically, you know, thieves, bad guys or whatever, that you then, once you take care of them, the whole area changes and becomes like, you know, peaceful again. And so once you've completed this public order like sort of section, it then unlocks more of the map, and then more people start returning actually to that area. But it's still not quite as sort of bustling as I would expect it to be, you know, considering what it is. But I mean, as I said, I'm only about 5 to 6 hours into this so far. No, maybe about 7 hours, I think. And there's just so much to do. And this is where it feels like this feels a lot more sort of gamey than Ghost of Tsushima does. It, like, that felt like a very sort of cinematic kind of experience. This feels much more like this is an open world game and they're throwing everything in. I mean, it's got crafting, it's got relationship building, there's skill trees, there's card games, there's like pretty much anything you can think of with like an open world game, and it's there. You know, like, you know, there's upgrades for all sorts of different systems, and all that's fine. Like, and it does feel though that you can choose to engage to a degree how much you want to engage with those things. I mean, I'm picking up loot, like, I've got so much stuff from just 5 to 6 hours play. I don't know what to do with any of this stuff. I'm just like choosing whatever weapon for the equipment that has the highest number, which is probably the wrong thing to do, and then using that, and it seems to be working okay. But it's such a mixed bag, this is. Like, there's so many things which are kind of interesting about it, but then by turns there's other things where you just think this probably could have done with a bit longer, and, you know, to sort of... to polish things up a bit. But I am enjoying it's the usual core loop that you get from an open world game of, like, you know, unlocking a new area, you know, discovering everything, a bit like we go to Tsushima. It's exactly the same thing. That's what I enjoyed about that game. You're clearing out bandit camps. It's got all of that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of curious to see where the story's going, because it has this, I mean, I know later on in the game you have to start making choices about who you're going to support, as to whether you're going to support like the Shogun, or if you're going to, you know, sort of revolt against that. And this is what I find interesting, because it has that whole thing of the people that are against, like, the government are basically saying, we don't want any foreigners in Japan. Like, we want to get rid of all of them. They've all got to be gone. Whereas the government forces are like, we need to work with them. We need to modernize, you know, this kind of thing. And you can see both perspectives, in the sense of, like, one is like, you know, worried about losing their culture and about, you know, losing what they are, but the other is like, well, we have to, you know, we have to do this. And it's, I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out in terms of the choices you make, because I know at the start of the game, they kind of give you both sides to sort of play with, and to sort of, it doesn't really affect too much, like, you know, which side you choose. But later on, I know that I'm going to have to choose a path. So I'm curious to see how they're going to present that, because it's very interesting, especially because when you see what happens to Japan after this period, where, you know, it does modernize, and it also becomes a colonial power in its own right, in the sense of it's like, you know, invades like Korea and then also China. And it's interesting. This is an interesting period, although it doesn't.
Yeah, because I wonder how much impact you can have on it, because obviously, as you say, we know what happened in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if you can essentially create, you know, like a little sort of alternate timeline within the game. Would be interesting.
I don't think so. No, because from what I've heard, it's like it cuts off pretty like towards the end before you start getting to the colonial stuff.
Okay.
It's that's
a shame.
Those bits. Yeah,
because that would be really interesting. But yeah.
Yeah, but there's also, it's interesting, like walking around the city, and there's all like, you know, there's like a French like area, and there's like a British area, and all this. It's interesting to see. But as I said, I'm very curious to see how they're going to politically, how they're going to look at all of this, because it's yeah, it's a difficult period, I think, for things. So, but yeah.
So other than the story, like, you think this has got enough about it where if you loved Ghost of Tsushima, it's different enough, or it's more the same with obviously slight differences, but how different really are these two games apart from the story?
I mean, I think in terms of combat, this feels a lot deeper and a lot, I'd say, yeah, combat-wise, it's a lot more interesting than Ghost of Tsushima was, which was quite, I wouldn't say it was basic, but it was just based on the stance system, wasn't it, basically? And then once
I think, yeah, Ghost of Tsushima got interesting when you were like, when you were clearing bases out and you were using all the abilities, right? And you're kind of switching in and out of stealth. So like you might be able to do a bunch of people silently, then actually have a few actual fights with people, and then chuck a smoke bomb and then disappear and then do some more stuff. Like, that was really cool, that ability to go in and out of stealth rather than just, oh, we've been spotted now, so now everyone in the camp knows where you are. That stuff was really cool. But yeah, when you were just like walking around and you'd get into duels with people and stuff, I didn't enjoy that stuff so much.
I mean, with this, it's, I mean, also you have like speechcraft and everything as well, like where you can, you can, if you dedicate, like, it also at the start, I mean, you can choose what kind of class of character you want to be. And one of the options is you can choose to be somebody who uses speech more, you know, to try and resolve problems rather than just using violence. I chose violence because it's fun.
Always.
I mean, I've not played any of their other games, like, that are of, not of this style, but, I mean, they had, like, Neo, right, was one of them.
Neo.
And what was the other one? There was there's another.
Neo 2?
There was that one, yeah. Is it, like, Wolong? I can't remember what the other one was.
Oh, was that them?
Yes, I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I've not played any of their others, so I'm not sure, you know, how this compares with those. But I mean, it's getting sort of middling reviews. This, like, it's getting like sort of sevens and eights or whatever if they are middling. It's, but I think it's worth a look. I mean, when I initially played it, I was really not sold on it. But then the more time I've spent, the more I've thought, yeah, I'm actually quite enjoying the loop here. It's good.
Yeah, and as you say, especially if it does actually have, like, if it does do justice to the sort of historical relevance of the story, so I think that's well worth, because that was my other main complaint with Ghost of Tsushima, is I thought the story was absolute bobbins.
Oh, it didn't engage with it at all, did it, really? It's just
so yeah, no, that's cool, man. I'm intrigued to see how you get on with it as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, yeah, I'm hoping that the history side of things is going to be dealt with. Like, I mean, one of the complaints I heard was people were like saying, like, oh, yeah, there should be more sort of fantastical elements to this, because basically anybody you fight is a human. And it's like, but I'm completely fine with that. It's like, I quite like this being quite grounded, you know, in how things are, because it's nice to play a game like that sometimes.
Yeah. Cool. Before we move on, Looper's fussing because he wants a piss. Can we have a 5-minute break?
Sure, we can.
Sorry, maybe a sec.
I just saw this thing on the stream. Who was it? You that added this, Matt or Sean?
Sean did that.
Yeah.
Week since James Farley's been on holiday. That was there last week.
That's very good. Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to reset that next week.
So I know. I think that's why you added it. Yeah. So you're gonna keep playing Rise of the Ronin then? I am, yeah. Your main game?
It is, but the trouble is because of going away, I'm not going to be able to. I mean, I've thought about
just don't turn your router off.
Well, that's the thing. I've thought about taking the portal with me to China, but then I'm just thinking there's no way that that's going to be a usable experience.
even for like VPNs and stuff.
No, I might try. Maybe I'll take Portal anyway and just try it, you know, to see what it's like. But I can't see it working very well.
Well, how long are you going away for?
3 weeks. Yeah,
you can't take the PS5 with you.
Nah, it's a bit big. It's a bit isn't huge, it? Isn't it? Yeah,
that's a shame. Yeah, Rise of Ronin's a weirdo. I mean, I haven't played it. I've seen like you know some people like oh, it's come out in the same week as Dragon's Dogma, so no chance. But. Mm. Some people probably bounce off Dragon's Dogma pretty easily in playlists.
Yeah, but no, it seems pretty good. Yeah.
But you're playing this at the same time you're playing Infinite Wealth, or have you stopped playing that?
I've stopped playing that for now, because it's one of those things, isn't it? You can only really play a game like that, ooh, like one of them at a time, or it gets ridiculous. Which was a shame, because I was really enjoying Infinite Wealth. I mean, I will go back to it, but yeah, just haven't
but
yet.
You're going to get Ronin done before and then go back to
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I wasn't, I mean, after my stream when I played Rise of Ronin, I was thinking, I'm not even sure if I'm going to continue with this like forever. But then, yeah, I started playing it over the weekend and was like, actually, I'm really enjoying this. It's good.
Mm. Nice.
Should we just crack
a
bit
on? A bonus there. Yeah.
I was sort of rejoined. I was like, oh, are they still going or are they just...
We're just off.
I was just
off chat,
debating whether to take my portal to China with me or not to see if I could possibly stream. I think it's highly unlikely it'll work.
It's worth the risk. Just don't. As long as you make sure you don't try, don't turn everything off before you leave the house.
Yeah. Don't unplug everything.
Yeah.
This time. Right. Questions time then. If you want to send us a question, go to tcgs.co/dearTCGS. Maria Mendieta says, Dear TCGS KOTOR, Helldivers 2 has made David giddy. Rebirth has made Matt return to gaming. Sean is ecstatic with Balatro, and the same game has made James renounce his faith as an ardent anti-deck builder. There is no better example that games can conjure an array of emotions than last week's episode. To discuss one emotion that often gets overlooked, what is a game or part of a game that has made you genuinely cringe? Recently, the lyrics to the opening theme music of Fire Emblem Engage has made me grit my teeth and wince at the same time. Keep up the amazing work. Sincerely, Maria.
That is a good point, because that Fire Emblem Engage is awful.
I mean, it's the game in general, yeah, but in my own song.
Yeah. I've forgotten what it was called. The first-person shooter that was a bit sort of pro-Russian propaganda... Possibly
Atomic Heart.
Yeah. That was it. The bit with the vending machine that's like a dominatrix, and sort of saying all sexy things while trying to grab you with wires, and it's just not explained at all and doesn't make any sense, and it's just completely out of place. And I was just like, why?
Yeah, it does sound really cringe. Whatever. Was that Atomic Heart?
It was Atomic Heart. Yeah, it's quite early in the game, Matt. So if you
I mean, I'm not even bothered, but that's just a friend might.
Yeah,
that sounds good. I mean, maybe interesting. I mean, I guess cool. It's so easy now just to skip to David Cage games.
That's true.
Yeah. Any sex scene in a David Cage game?
Or any scene in a David Cage game?
It's not any scene. The Ferris wheel, that was good.
I mean, we all made fun of Narman Jayden with his great glasses, but now look at Matt aiding his productivity with his $2,500 Apple headset.
Exactly, yeah.
It's, you know.
Great glasses.
David Cage is a visionary, sadly.
Still chasing the high of that stream, honestly. I'm never going to reach that again. That was so good.
Yeah, that game has so many moments. Are you playing the piano, the great glasses bit, the opening the door bit?
My favourite bit of that game, actually, was that when they go to that person's apartment, and like they walk in there, and it's like, I think this guy might be a bit religious, and there's like just crosses everywhere. It's just like, it's safe, like with such like just complete sincerity. You're just like, this is, it's very good.
I can't but think.
No,
of...
I mean, I think
go on, sorry.
Like the idea of a game making me properly cringe in the way of maybe some cringe comedies or I just think like that feels as tricky to do often for me personally as like good comedy games. Like I don't think I've ever like cringed at a game in quite a way. Same way I would cringe at movies or TVs or whatever, but TV shows. But
yeah, I really can't think of much else. It's not really a thing in games, is it? It's usually, I'd say, like it's usually more like you personally cringing at the subject matter rather than like a character being in a scenario. Yeah.
See, maybe they'll come with better quality graphics and animation and so on and so forth, maybe.
Maybe.
Make things more believable.
There are so many things in Infinite Wealth that could be in that direction, but it just always goes on the right line of being funny rather than making you cringe.
Yeah, I think Yakuza in general's a pretty good example of how to avoid that, right? There are so many things that would be, there's definitely bits in Yakuza games that you would be embarrassed to be seen playing, but
you speak for yourself, Sean.
But just there is a certain amount of heart in it, right? And so it sort of doesn't come across as cynical as perhaps it could.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. All right. Ben from Oregon says, evening, fellas. I would love to hear Dr. This isn't even about video games, but it's something I've been meaning to ask you, James. So here it is. I would love to hear Dr. Farley's thoughts or opinions on all things the three-body problem. I feel he'd have a unique perspective, knowing his specialty in academics and family history. I assume he's read the book, but who knows? Has he seen the Tencent-produced Chinese TV show, or has he seen any of the Netflix version? Can't wait for Wednesday. Your show is the best gaming content of the week. IMO. Love you all. Cheers, Ben.
Yeah, I'll start watching this.
Have you?
On Netflix, yeah.
Cool. Because this is...
It's weird.
Go on, sorry.
This is what's weird, because I haven't read the book, but I did actually yesterday.
Heard of it before now?
Yeah, I heard of it. Yeah, cool. And yesterday I actually started watching the Netflix version.
Okay,
and I watched the opening. I watched the opening of that, and I was fascinated, just straight from the opening, mostly because I know of the Tencent version, which is 30 episodes long, which is and. There's been a whole thing, because obviously the Netflix version is not available legally in China.
Right.
And one of the things that I found really interesting was that the opening to this version on Netflix has this cultural revolution scene, which is pretty brutal, I would say. Mm. And the imagery and everything is all most of the stuff that I studied for work, for quite a long time. And it's absolutely fascinating. And I just thought, how is that going to come across? Because that aspect of history is not really spoken about or sort of covered. And one of the things that I found when I was just reading up, because I was just curious, is that the original book has that stuff sort of in the middle. They move it to the guy moves it to the middle of the book rather than right at the start. Mm. And that was to get it through government censors, because they were not happy about this being front loaded. Mm. But they do this for the Netflix version, where they move it to the front, which is actually where the author wanted it to be in the beginning.
Right.
As it were.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm intending to watch it. It looks interesting. I mean, a lot of my friends in China are huge fans. They really, really, really dig it. But I don't really know enough about it without having watched it myself.
Yeah, I know it's a trilogy of books, and I heard months ago about this, and I thought this sounds fantastic, and I bought the book on Kindle, but just didn't read it for reasons. I've watched the first three episodes, and there's also a really big VR component to this, which is also interesting. Mm-hmm. I only really knew of I knew something about aliens or space, and I had before this show came out, I actually read into what the three body problem actually is. Mm-hmm. It's an actual kind of issue where no one can solve, this kind of
a physics problem, right?
Yeah, it's a physics thing about if three planets are near each other, three huge bodies are three, spatial bodies are near each other, they can't predict where things will go around with orbits. With two planets, you can predict how something nearby would switch between or move around them two things because of the way orbit works. But if a third one appears, then it all goes out the window and it's impossible to predict. Mm. So I looked into that, and then I'm really excited about this. Yeah, it's an interesting show. I mean, it doesn't quite have the HBO level of quality.
Mm.
There's something, clearly a lot of money's gone into this, but there's just something about it. It's just not quite on the same level as the very best TV. Also, this is done by, it's the showrunners of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And it's, maybe not surprised, but there are fuckloads of Game of Thrones actors in this. Also, shitloads of British comic actors, like Kevin Eldon's in this. Reece Shearsmith and the other dude from League of Gentlemen's in this.
Oh, cool.
It's set in Britain, parts of it are. So yeah, it's like, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I'm going to keep watching it. Mm. And you know, the idea is really interesting. But I'm going to keep watching it. You're going to watch? Yeah, Kevin Eldon's in it. Yeah, Phil Wall. Yeah, I was like,
the actor Kevin Eldon.
I'm interested, but I haven't got Netflix at the moment because I was going through a phase of there was nothing really on there that I wanted, and it's like 18 quid a month now, whatever it is.
Well, they knew.
So yeah, maybe this will pull me back in.
Do you know, I did something stupid the other day. Yeah. I mean, well, not stupid. It's really annoying. I forgot. You know how Disney Plus, they increased all the subscription prices like ridiculously recently. And did you get caught as well, Matt, with this?
Yeah, I forgot. I'll let you finish yours first.
Yeah, I forgot because I was going to change it like to a lower tier because I was like, we're still going to keep it because we're still watching quite a lot of stuff on there. Mm-hmm. Like the kids watch stuff on there all the time. And, you know, as I said, I've been watching Buffy and Angel with Rachel, and we just finished Buffy. So we're watching Angel at the moment. But then I got the notification on my phone. Yeah, £109 has just been taken from your account. And I was like,
blimey.
What? And then I'd forgotten that they'd increased it to that level. And
I was looking at my subscription. So if you pre-ordered it before it came out, I think the first thing was like 50 quid for the year.
Obviously,
it was never going to be that. And it's still, you know, considering Netflix is 18 quid a month, this is still way better value. And even 109, still better than Netflix's prices. I was like, 109 quid. I got confused because, I mean, I think we've all been in the same situation where if you get a new phone, 3 months Disney Plus, you buy that, 3 months Disney Plus. And all those things, I've been able to, like, with O2, like, add them onto my existing Disney Plus subscription. Mm-hmm. It pauses your current subscription, and then code goes on the free one till the free one expires, then goes back to the paid one. And I had like 3 or 4 of these, and I was like, I don't know where I am. I don't know what day it is. And then so just happened that, I guess, I was all run out, and then suddenly it's like, bang, here's the money.
You want to get yourself a Samsung phone, mate? You've got a year of Disney Plus with that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But so, again, I had to, when I got the phone, I was like, right, this is the date my current Disney Plus sub runs out, so I'm going to cancel it now, put a marker in my calendar to remind me to then get the code to get the free, because I just knew I would just forget and then just let it run.
I should have done that because I was gonna downgrade it to like I think it was like 70 quid or something like that, or just over 70 quid for like the one I was.
What does downgrading it do?
I think you lose like the ability to like download stuff or something. I can't remember what it is, but there's like
download stuff. Not to go on another tangent, but speaking of Disney Plus, are either of you watching Shogun?
No, but I've heard lots of people say it's really excellent.
It's so good. It's incredible. I won't go on about it because this is meant to be a video games podcast, but it's absolutely stunning.
The last thing I watched Disney Plus, me and Eddie watched Taylor Swift Eras tour, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
it
was really watched that incredible. As well. I didn't, but yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I want to watch Folklore next. What was the question?
Body
problem. I'm going to keep watching it, and it's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I have more to say after I've seen it, but yeah,
Right, this next one comes from Gas Man, which is an incredible insight into the sort of clout that people think we have. Dear TCGS, hope you're all feeling wonderful this fair spring. For suggestions on possible guests, apart from Dr. James Farley, I would like to submit a couple of suggestions. Frankie Boyle has stated multiple times that he at least plays FIFA, or whatever it's called now. He's bound to have some interesting views on the philosophy and business ethics of games, and he's been brilliant on a guest on other podcasts, Hip Hop Saved My Life, Taskmaster Podcast, and recently on Off Menu. Munya Chihuahua recently made posts and comments on the beauty of Sekiro, I believe it was, and my logic is that Sekiro is hardly a my first gaming experience type of game, so would wager that he has a longer passion for games. Additionally, am I correct in remembering that TCGS's anniversary is coming up soon? Will you be doing any stream or celebration in connection with this? I know James is travelling, so will that also fit in with his tradition of moving birthdays to fit his schedule? All the best, Gasman, bamboo based boxers. Good move. I don't think we could get either of those guests on, to be honest.
No, they're both incredibly successful.
But then you just think, well, what's the harm in asking?
Yeah, well, I mean, Munya's too busy making songs about 15 seconds after news breaks. So I don't think he'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll do a 3-hour podcast on a Monday.
Why not? Frankie, but I mean, wouldn't he just take the piss out of us? Probably not.
That's good,
right?
Though. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'll be good content. No, I think he's a perfectly nice fella, isn't he? Like, I think it's like seeing him on Taskmaster. I'd sort of gone back and forth on Frankie Boyle over the years, and then seeing him on Taskmaster, it's like, oh yeah, he's a nice old man now, isn't he? He's fine.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe we can try. I don't see it happening,
no.
But yeah, it doesn't hurt to try.
No.
It doesn't hurt to try, as Sean says. And yeah, the anniversary. Yeah, so our 8th birthday is on the 6th of April, which is coming up. It's not far, soon, is it? Like two weeks or so.
James, you're definitely
James
away.
Is away.
Yeah. But when are you back?
Let me have a look. Hang on.
No, I'm just thinking, like, if it's just a matter of delaying it by a couple of days so that we can do a birthday stream with all four of us.
More than a couple of days. So the next show I'll be on will be the 22nd of April.
Never mind.
Sorry.
We'll see. We'll see. But if it's just us three, we'll do something. If we delay it, I mean, what does it really matter?
I mean, I'll be back for the
fucking point.
I'll be back
for the 10th.
No, for episode 400, I'm definitely back during that's happening, because that's in like 6 episodes time, so we're good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more important, if anything, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, it probably is actually. we might do something. We'll see. We'll see what happens in terms of diaries and that. You know what I mean?
Would it be like would it be nice to do like an episode like where we just do questions or something, or would that be, I don't know if that'd be rubbish.
I don't like it. It's a regular pod for like we record on Monday and out on Wednesday, but it's just questions.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, that's that could be a bonus, sure, but that can't take the place of a regular pod.
Yeah, I suppose not.
People are like, you've really mugged me off on a Forte show. You've mugged me off for questions about
James,
what's your favourite waffle.
No one else wants to do the news. So we don't want to play any games either, so it's fine. Okay, last question comes from Greg. When it was getting savaged by the critics, I noticed that the new Alone in the Dark was an Embracer Group game. Here's a question. Given just how many studios they bought, can you name a single hit game they've published through one of their subsidiaries since forming Embracer Group in 2019?
No.
This will be great in the cuisining question.
I mean, to be clear, Alone in the Dark didn't get savaged, right? It's like a 6 out of 10, which is a shame considering, you know, the talent that's in it. I think people had high hopes. But yeah, I don't think it was like total shit or anything. But yeah, the last...
did they do Saints Row?
They did Saints Row, but then that was a flop, right? It's meant to be all right. Like, it's meant to be good. Louis P in the chat says, when was the last Borderlands? So I guess Tiny Tina's... What was it? Tiny Tina's...
Something or other.
Wonderland. Was it Wonderland?
I think it was Wonderland, yeah.
I don't think that was a massive hit, though. I think it's meant to be all right.
Though, I mean, it's hard enough to name a game they've done, let alone a hit game.
Yeah.
Didn't they do The Hobbit?
Again.
Which was...
No, Gollum, you mean?
Oh, Gollum, yeah.
Was that them?
Yeah.
Schmeagel.
Oh, so, yeah. God. Yeah, it's not been a good couple of years. For Embracer,
right,
has it?
Loopy said that's Nacon or Nacon.
Okay.
That's Nacon, mate.
So, Greg, the answer is no. We can't think of any. So that's
something. Yeah. That's why they're all trying to get out, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
makes sense. But it is kind of incredible.
Imagine if they tried to acquire us and then they shut us down.
How much money would we get?
Yeah, do we get...
We get money and we don't have to do this anymore. That's the dream, isn't it?
We would have had to do it for 2 years to get the golden handshake.
We'd just start another podcast. It'd be fine.
Yeah, and it'd be called GTCS or something.
You'll have like David say, look, we can buy ourselves out.
Yeah, 500 million and we'll go independent. But we have entered an agreement with Microsoft as well.
That is it for questions. Matt, would you like to do the socials?
Yes. This Wednesday, if you're a Patreon supporter at the £8.50 and above tier, we are doing our Patreon video stream for March 2024. And this month, we're reading Sonic versus Sonic. It's
playing,
a Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Playing Sonic versus Sonic. It's going to be an interactive experience. It's going to be like playing one of the games on the Mega Drive.
Yes, without the music. So we'll be doing that, and if that ends early, maybe we'll find something else to play as well, because that might just be 20 minutes. That's Wednesday. I'll endeavour to get a post out tomorrow, Tuesday, if you'll listen to this. now. Doesn't matter. A post will be out this week before Wednesday. I lost what day it was in. It doesn't matter. A post will be on Patreon if you're the relevant tier to find out how to watch it live. Thursday.
Can I change this? Sean, can I stream on Thursday, please?
Please do. I don't have any plans to stream this week. So.
Okay. So I will do Dark Souls 3 on Thursday.
Cool.
Brilliant. Week. That is at 9 p.m. on twitch.tv/TCGS. Go search for TCGS in the app and you can find us, find the channel, follow us if you want. If you've got Amazon Prime, you've got Twitch Prime Gaming.
You're kidding
me. Connect your Amazon account with a Twitch account. And they give you one free sub you cannot keep. You can't take it with you. You have to give it away. You have to give it away. Otherwise, you'll lose it. And it's free real estate you're giving away,
money
basically.
Falling out of your pockets.
Give us your free sub because we really genuinely hugely appreciate it. It, you know, puts some money in our pocket and makes James feel happy and all of us all happy. So connect your accounts. And yeah, everyone's got a Twitch account. Everyone's got Amazon Prime. Connect your accounts. Give us your free sub. Lovely old job. If you miss them live as well, just search TCGS on YouTube and there'll be a VOD probably a day or two or three, depending on how busy I am, after the stream. The patrons, patreon.com, I'll just mention that, patreon.com/TCGS, supports what we're doing over there and all that kind of stuff. And the website is tcgs.co for our amazing Discord community, the store to buy the James t-shirt, socials, podcasts, other stuff.
We haven't talked about the t-shirt, have we? Thank you so much to everyone who's bought one. It was a very silly joke that's run out, you know, got completely out of hand, but it's been so funny seeing people like posting pictures of them wearing one and stuff. I'm sure James is also equally amused.
James is amused. Everyone loves it. Well, we'll see what other merch we can do, which isn't going to take the absolute piss cost wise. And again, we can change the prices, but like for that mug, we couldn't change the price.
Yeah,
and
that's as low as it is.
Ridiculous. So we'll see if there's anything that's not going to, you know, take the piss too much.
Yeah. Cool. That's it. James, you're off for a bit now.
Yeah.
Right. Is there anything you want to say to the listeners?
Not really.
Are you going to leave with anything? Fine. Any advice?
That's how much he cares about you, everyone at home.
See, you're off now for 3 weeks, James, yeah?
Yeah. I'm off back.
We're not going to remember what you look like.
That's all right. You can have a look at the T-shirt.
We've all got the T-shirts. It's fine.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
I'll just look down. But you'll be upside down, so we won't be the same. Yeah. We'll have to see if we can get some guests on.
Yes, we will. We haven't talked about that, have we? Let's get Frankie Boyle on the phone.
Frankie Boyle, Munya, and then
the three-person show. And then one three-manner just to save a few
Obama.
Quid.
We'll end with Obama.
Yeah, get Obama on. Yeah, he'd be up for it. Right. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week. Thanks for letting us be natural.
Hey.
Bye.
Ta-ra.